whatever, however the train is beyond. But the Wednesday before the first Thursday is Halloween. So the board should probably consider whether or not that's going to affect them, or would you like to move it to this second week again next year? The next meeting will be December 14th. It will be in Salt Lake City. The financial review is in your board docs. I did not print that out for you. Chad, do you want to bring up the financial review documentation? And it just shows you the listing of money. Those are in yellow are the applications that are up for, scroll down to the bottom, up for review today and off pending with Kingston. The latest numbers are right there. The mineral lease revenue that we received today is $9 million, which is, you know, down a bit. The revenue for bonus is there, as you can see. The board has miles to go as far as loaning. So there's a lot of ability or a lot of money that can be loaned out at interest in that bonus fund. The applications that are, we had Glenwood that withdrew, or they didn't withdraw. They requested that the review of that application details until a future date. We'll review that when they're ready to present it, and they'll keep us posted. So the applications that will be reviewed are current there. It starts out with Carbon County, goes down to Southeastern, and then off the Pending. And there are four items for discussion. And that's...
Janice, real quick, do we have a copy of that
in board docs?
Yes.
Chad, go back and show the link. Do you have a copy of it? It's the financial review under briefing. Number 2, 1.2. And that document is attached there.
Thank you.
Did everybody have a wonderful experience with board docs? Bruce?
Fabulous.
Is everybody up and running on their materials?
Yes. I had to have them email it to me because I could not log in with my password and username.
I can
change your password again, and you can change it to what you want.
Ken,
I can do that if you
want. Ken, in discussion, I had a problem. In the discussion that was brought up, is perhaps there's a way to download the whole package.
There isn't.
Okay.
It's all cloud-based, but Chad can tell you how you can.
Yes.
I think what we'll suggest in the future is just like Chad did a thumb drive this time, that we'll load that onto Google Drive and just share it in case people need to download it. Take it off of a Google Drive.
I can't Google Drive it because it's folder based. I have to have some kind of software to do that, they would have to have some software.
Yeah, if I talk to the vendor, I think it's kind of problematic that they don't have a single file option. I work with other boards and we have electronic packets and it's all single file. You click download and then you've got it on your machine and off you run. So if you have problems like this, it's all there without multiple files. So I'm surprised the vendor doesn't have a single file option.
Well, something like Google Drive, even within the state system, will provide that opportunity where you can share it with one quickly.
This board docs are contracted digital for a year, but keep in mind that we can find products that will have that ability, or if we can get board docs, we're leaving, man, if you don't get this, the ability to download this, it really needs to be there. We'll work on that, and that's all good comments.
And I'd ask the vendor also to make an app version they work on. That's the thing.
As long as you can use it easily in its format, if we can get them to have a downloadable potential for that, then that would be helpful.
But in summary, it's a good way to move forward.
Well, face it.
We learn from these.
As long as there's power, You got that.
Okay, thank you, Candace. We'll go ahead and start with the introductions here with the board members. We'll start down with Gail and just go around the room here.
Gail Gardner with Housing and Community Development.
Mr. Jim Rockin representing the ALB, 6th County.
Jim Matt from Kane County, representing 5th County AOG.
Tanya Norton, I'm representing UN and County.
Nadi Sanadi from St. John, representing the Utah Commission.
Chad West with Housing and Community Development.
Brian Alder with the Utah Attorney General's Office.
David Anderson, State Treasurer.
Jonathan Hardy, Chair of the Board.
Kiki, Community Development.
Candace Powers, Community Development Fund Manager, Merrill Lynch. Chris Reed, Admin Assistant.
I'm Bruce Adams, I'm the County Commissioner representing Southeastern Utah AOG, and I'm excited to receive a visit from President Trump the first part of December.
You mean we have to come back?
That's what was reported in the paper.
I don't know if I can top that.
Yeah,
I Steve Farrell, representing the Board of Water Resources.
Good morning, Greg Galecki, representing Water Quality.
Jack Lyle, Dagger County Commissioner, representing the Utah Basin Association of Governments.
Ron Lair from the Utah County Commission, representing the Utah County.
Great, thank you. Next item on the agenda is the approval of minutes. A motion by Mr. Zanotti to approve the minutes, and second from Commissioner Ogden. Commissioner Winterton.
One correction. It's on page 11. I just want to give credit down there. It talks about this is where Mr. McGee became Dagg County in terms of the project. Then we mentioned Christian Miner, Jim Briner.
County attorney in Carbon County. Very well. Any further discussion? All in favor of the approval of the minutes with that correction, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I abstain.
Okay, an extension from Mr. Galecki. So as Candace indicated, our first project that was on the agenda, the Town of Glenwood, has asked for their application to be held and be considered at a later time. So we'll move on to project number two, which is the Carbon County Municipal Building Authority. We'll turn some time over to Candace for the staff briefing and invite those who are going to speak for the project to come to the table at this time.
Carbon County Municipal Building Authority is presenting an application for funding in the amount of $1 million grant. They have $100,000 applicant cash. It's for two county fire trucks. One will be placed in Wellington and one will be in Helper City. From the bid, many fire departments we have worked with pursuing CID funding have elected to take 100% prepay option on the apparatus. If this is a consideration for the Carbon County Municipal Building Authority, we would be happy to get that additional discount quoted for you. My question would be, are these bids final, and do they have all the discounts, and what will be necessary to get those discounts? But it is two large fire trucks, and that is the application request.
Is there anybody from Carbon County here to represent this application?
I make a motion to put it on pending list.
A motion to place the application for Carbon County Municipal Building Authority on the pending list by Commissioner Winterton.
Second.
A second from.
Fritz.
I'm going to give this to Mary Norm because she raised her hand. I was told that if you raise your hand, that you get called upon. So a second from Mayor Norton. Any further discussion to that motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Placed on the pending list. It didn't matter that it started at 9 o'clock looking all for these applications like that. Project number three is Huntington City. We'll turn it over to Candace, and those who are here to talk about Huntington City applications can come to the table at this time.
Huntington City is a Huntington City is presenting a funding request to do some cemetery flood mitigation. This is phase two. It's a $74,000 grant request. On October 6, 2017, Huntington City received $60,000 grant for constructing a cemetery fence and drain system to prevent flooding in the cemetery. This also included 50 linear feet of concrete wall in order to mitigate that. They say that these improvements have greatly enhanced the look of the cemetery and have eliminated the flooding issue on the north section of the cemetery. The city has a need in improvements to expand to the south and continue to precast concrete walls to the south edge of their property. And it's shown in attachment 2B in your board docs. This will also include grading, drainage improvements, and ensure that the existing road and new concrete wall will be preserved for the future. From the Huntington, September 20th, 2017 minutes, if we don't get the funding, I'll only grant. The board should ask them what the plan is and how they can afford this. And Huntington City will may be able to sell plots, but that's looking towards the future, and that revenue does not exist right now. So that is what they're requesting. Close.
Hey, I don't know if that mic is turned on in front of you, but you want to introduce yourself.
Is that on?
Yes, it is on.
I'm Mayor Hillary Gordon. This is
Lamar Drummond, City Councilman.
Going to be Mayor.
And Janine Hanson, City Reporter.
This project is one that we were not anticipating at the time when we came in before and applied for the money, of which we did put in $50,000 from the Perpetual Care Fund. When that part was done, it became obvious that we needed to address the other part of that area. The cemetery sort of sits down in a little swale with the blue shale hills behind it. And when we had those, I call them gallery washers anyway, the big rainstorms that come, down comes the blue shale, and it covers the graves over the top. Of course, the people who have loved ones there are not happy with that scenario. So we are, we're in the first part of that project to rectify that. And then this spring, we had one of our roads. It wasn't like a great big road, but anyway, it was a natural road going to the shed where we keep our lawnmowers and stuff, and the road collapsed. So we then paid for that road to be fixed out of the Perpetual Care Fund, and we were asking for some grants to just finish this other section of the cemetery to prevent any and further flooding across the grave.
Okay. Questions from the board on this application?
So, I guess I was confused a little bit from the notes because it appeared as though, if I'm following correctly, is the notes appeared as though you just ran out of money on the first phase. But it sounds like now what really happened is you decided it needed to extend it. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. We, the first phase, to tell you the truth, at that time, I was not thinking that the cemetery has a huge road down the middle, and then it has the older part and the newer part, and we address from up here where the monument is over to, as you're looking at it, to the right-hand side, and then we've had several problems on the other side and had people come in saying, can you possibly get this done? So I know from past experience that the CIB really likes us to put everything together in one project rather than two. Make two projects, but I wasn't really aware that, that this would be an issue, but when you fix one side, the other side says to me, so.
Now, how high is this retaining wall? How tall is this retaining wall?
How high is it? 8 or 10 feet.
Because my first thought is when you see that there's a road there, and if you have runoff coming from the slopes, I'm not exactly sure why it can't just be handled by a ditch by the road. Can you explain that?
Well, the ditch has to run into, water has to run into somewhere, obviously you know that, and so without that, which we did not have, and of course it floods across. The one area that we have ditched, we have the ditch there, and then the wall is basically in front of it so that it mitigates, and then the water comes on down and goes into the new drainage system that we've done. The other half there on the part that we haven't done is flooding down and just needs to be fixed.
You have phases one and phases two. It looks like the existing part is irrigated, your new area. Is it irrigated?
Yes, yes. Both. I say the new area, it basically really isn't new. It's I'm going to say, 15, 20 years? 20 years old? So it's, well, it's not like a brand new area. We just designated it as the old part of the new part where people are buying plots because that was the original site, and then any other sites, so I don't know why we really call it new, except I suppose it technically is. The others have all the pioneers in it, and this is just the area that now we're having an issue with. So we need to fix this before it becomes a really big problem.
Mayor, you said that in your public hearing meetings you have a provincial fund that you mentioned that you can use some money to build this segment.
Yeah, we took, last time we took $50,000 out of the perpetual care fund to put with the money that you gave us.
So you still have the money to do the second portion, or are you going to do that?
In looking at that, I could do 10. If that would make the difference, we could do 10,000 out of perpetual care. So then you would only be asking for 60 instead of 70.
I was thinking maybe we'll have a half.
Just our perpetual care fund, we had to use it, as I said, for the road that collapsed. We had a unexpected flooding that it showed the little shed right there at the end, and that road formed the big road coming to that shed collapsed this spring, and so we took money out of perpetual care to fix that road and redo that road. We also put in, as I said, and I know you have the information, that $50,000 from the perpetual care to do the other half of the wall. And we could put another 10 in this if that would help.
So as Commissioner Nazari said, if it was only 50-50, you would wind up just doing it from the perpetual fund as the funds came available? Or
at 50-50, that would really put us in a bind. I was hoping that.
So it would put you in a bind to complete the project at this point?
Yes. It would. That's why I'm here.
And what capacity is the cemetery at now?
The capacity? You're pretty small.
No, no, what I mean is available space.
I'm going to guess around 1,000 in
the one. Yeah, I guess what I'm looking at is that a percentage. If there is available space that is improved, if you still have 30% available, 2% available.
There's probably 50-60% on the new section that would be on the there, and there's still some available in the older section of the cemetery. And then to the south of where that arrow is, our property goes clear to where that roadway comes in on the very bottom. So that's not developed at this point.
How much of the fees for the plot? What do you charge them for each plot?
Each plot, 300.
300
for veterans.
Right.
And they complained about that.
So it'll take quite a while to generate enough funds to cover what we're asking for.
Mr. Chairman, we gave them last time $60,000 for the first phase of the cemetery. I suggest the same $60,000 this time to be approved by the board.
Motion.
Yes.
Motion to approve a $60,000 grant. Is that correct, Mr. Hamadi?
Yes.
Motion's in order. Is there a second to that motion? A second from Commissioner Adams. Any further discussion to that motion? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That will be placed on the pending list for our priority list for the funding meeting coming up in February.
February.
Yep. February, okay. $60,000 grant. Thanks.
Thank you
so much. Appreciate it. Hey, everyone. What am I supposed to do? I want to see you tomorrow. I bet you know that. Our next project is Landing City. Turn the time over to Candace and invite those that are going to speak to this to come to the table at this time.
Landing City is presenting an application for quite a few pieces of equipment. They have $250,000 cash. They are requesting $250,000 in grant funding to purchase a street sweeper, backhoe, snow pusher, dump truck bed, snow plow, spreader, mini excavator, vibratory roller, roller trailer, and an air compressor. The two major pieces in this application, because CIB usually funds capital projects, are the street sweeper Elgin Badger for $200,000 and the backhoe Cat for $100,815. The rest of them are smaller purchases, and there are also three other large purchases when we get down to $20,000. A mini X-Cat for $57,000, a dump truck Ford F-550 for $52,000, and a vibratory roller Cat for $42,000. And the rest are listed on the pages that with the at the end of the description. That's it.
Thanks, Mike. Introduce yourselves for us and speak to the request.
Okay, thank you for listening to us today. I'm Joel Lyden, City Council member, and this is Terry Ecker, our city engineer. We have an ongoing capital projects plan. Obviously, we're saving towards replacement of some of this equipment. We're, so it's all evident in your information there. As some of these are getting old enough, the maintenance costs, I believe, are starting to eat into our ability to save for the replacement. And so if we can get this done as a package deal where we're coming with half the money, our maintenance costs go down, and I think our savings then can accelerate for the eventual replacement of some of these new pieces of equipment. So if you have any questions, Terry may be more adept at answering those as far as any specific piece of equipment.
Yeah, we're all going to be experts on all this equipment by the time the meeting's over, I'm sure. So, yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Mr. Lyman, are you buying these in the eBay? Because I don't know how you're going to manage to purchase this many stuff for $250,000.
Well, we're bringing the $250,000 that we have in savings, the $250,000 grant, we got $500,000. I'm not sure where did you come up with the equipment estimates or are these quotes that we.
The estimates all come from state bid prices.
I'm surprised to see that you can do this.
Yeah, so these are state bid prices, and that's what people are selling for. So.
Is it new or used?
New.
What is the status of your cash? $250,000, where is it coming from?
That's coming from our capital projects savings. It's specific for equipment replacement.
Is there a timeframe for me to get the state bid?
They are locked in. I'm not sure what the timing is on all of those.
Did you get the other factor or January 1st?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm not sure how long they're locked in. I'm not sure. But presumably, I think a lot of state bids will go for for a year, some of them for a couple of years.
Commissioner Lytle. Sorry. Commissioner Lytle first, and then we'll go to Councilman Farrell.
Are you surplusing, and pardon me if I misstated the amendment, but are you surplusing any items where this is replacement, or is this something that
I don't recall the question on that, but the rule is we always surplus anything.
That I'm replacing?
These are everything here is being replaced. And so anything we have there, our practice is always to surplus or we see what we can get as well. Councilman Farrell.
Have you looked into the initial lease with CAT on some of this equipment? We haven't. Because I know a backhoe, I have a backhoe lease from them, and it's only $7,000 a year, and we replace it every 3 years.
That's an excellent question.
The same for the EX. So they have a leasing program for municipalities that works quite well.
I would like to commend you guys for coming in, you know, bringing in a lot of cash, seeing what you need, putting the whole package together. And this is a little bit of, you know, going to this leasing option that may get. Well, where I'm going with this is that $250,000 for your size of the town is quite a lot of money to come up with. My suggestion is, would you consider if we did, rather than that, 50-50, did a $500,000 loan at 1%. And that averages all your cash, and it helps our funding of things. And I'm trying to find it. I saw somewhere, but it would be about 12, 20 years, one that would be something like $12,000 a year. Had you considered that offer? I know I come from a small town, so I know bringing it together, you've done a lot of work. So,
initially, I was, you know, this is where we're missing Jeremy, the state administrator. He's in for gallstone surgery yesterday, so he may have a better answer for that. Initially, I think, well, he's probably talked through this pretty good. This is the way we want to go. Immediately start rebuilding that savings towards the eventual replacement, you know, 10, 20 years down the road or something. So that's a, you know, full thing on loan, and it gives us that cash to be making that loan service. I mean, I'm thinking out loud, but I don't really have a good answer without Jeremy here. He may be awake, though, he can call in.
Most of that equipment will be wore out in 10 years, and so we're on 20 years. We really don't want to have a 20-year loan where we're still paying our equipment that's wore out and we can trade into their surplus.
Yeah, so considering that the loan would be in excess of the lifespan of most of the equipment, probably that doesn't work.
Do you want to wait until consider the leasing portion of it? Talk to you.
The leasing? It's a valid question for sure, yeah. Whether it's been considered by the administrator, that I don't know.
If something on the table there, something you make your homework and decide to come back and there's a new application or a new application.
If it goes to status of pending, then what are the options if we come back and with an answer on the lease? Then do we still get an answer, or what is our timeline then if we're...
Pretty much the same. Once you're ready to come back, you'll be on that next agenda. We consider the application with that new information, and the board can make any decision they want, including, you know, placing it on the priority list, and that would be in the February funding meeting. They have the option to do this.
I don't know how we've looked at lease. I know we've looked at lease on several things in the years over the past. I've been here 10 years. And oftentimes our remote location makes the lease not work. And so I don't know if that's the case with this, because I haven't looked at it. But that has been the case at times when, yeah, you can have a great lease program, but the guy that's running the lease is 300 miles away and it actually
guess I have a question for the staff. Can we fund these things? I guess to start with, and apparently we must. I wouldn't be here, but I'm kind of the impression we've kind of stopped it. Emergency equipment and things. I do know that we've done ambulances, I know we've done fire trucks, things of that nature, but I guess I'm looking for history.
Right, yeah, and you're correct, Commissioner, in that the larger items we have historically funded, such as the sweeper, the backhoe, excavators of various sizes, and dump trucks, certainly, we've done. You get down to things like air compressors and snow pushers and spreaders and those kind of things that are smaller. We have not done those. So the board may want to consider perhaps funding loan grant combination on the larger items and let the city use their money for some of the smaller items. But that's traditionally what we've done.
If there were a motion for some portion of the grant less than the 250, then we would just have to see how we're tying, how we're addressing that now.
So then, Mayor Gordon?
For a former community, this seems like a large list. How does this compare to maybe all of your capital projects list of items? Is this half? Is this three-fourths?
Well, our total capital projects list would be millions of dollars.
But I mean for equipment.
For equipment? This is probably everything, this is every piece of equipment that's considered. I mean, on our capital projects plan, we have one line item that is the city, the large city equipment. And so this is everything that's on it. Well, it's everything that's on it that needs to be replaced right now. I don't know what else might be there.
I just was thinking it might be better to be on some kind of rotation where you're not all at once asking for everything all at once and everything works out all at once or something like
that. Well, yeah, I don't know why. I couldn't answer as to how many other things are on the list. But the street sweeper in the back one, the dump truck, just all of just kind of wearing out at the same time. I don't know if that would normally be the case.
You don't know the age of any of this equipment?
I think our current street sweeper is a 2004, and our backhoe might be a couple of years newer. Our newest backhoe, we have a couple of backhoes.
Well, there is. I mean, we do have stuff on the rotation in the maintenance program, the whole team. So the staff is right that this list that we really need to get these replaced.
So you want to spin in and then suggest that we should consider some kind of loan grant combination for you then? Is that involved?
I think I'd like, I'm pretty confident that the administrator would be able to answer some of those questions. He's pretty thorough. And so the fact that he's saying this is what we want to ask for, that's what we want to ask for. And if we, but I did ask him, I said if they can give you part of that in grant, with our match, then what? He says, then we will buy in priority the top things, and the other will just have to work out over the next few years as our savings accumulate to do those. So I kind of already asked you that question. Chance.
I'd make a motion that we put it on the pending list and give them a chance to talk to Jeremy and look at the option that they have on possibly leasing some of this equipment. Come back to either next meeting or come back before February and we can make a decision on that. Would that help you, Mayor?
I second that motion.
Yeah, because I don't know that we've considered the lease.
Okay.
So that's a very good question.
Okay, motion to put on a pending list by Commissioner Adams and a second from Mr. Zanotti. Any further discussion of that motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, pending list. We'll
thank you for your consideration.
Thanks for that. Okay, Town of Henryville. We'll invite you to come to the table at this time, and we'll turn the time over to Candace for the staff briefing on this project.
The Town of Henryville is presenting a request for road improvements in the amount of a $350,000 grant. It's to clean, tack, and overlay streets 19 feet wide with a total of 225,120 square feet at $1.69 each of those square feet for a total of $380,452. The town of Henryville is putting applicant cash in. BMC road revenues in 2016 equaled $12,000, and that doesn't quite cover a 10-year loan, which is if you pledge BMC road funds, you have a 10-year limit, and the payment on a 10-year for $350,000 would be $35,000. So another revenue source would have to be pledged if you choose to loan money for that. Because that would lengthen the term. BMC road funds can only be used for that. There are 240 residents. It's located on Highway 12, and it's 20 miles outside of Bryce Canyon, so those roads are used. There are no local businesses. The town tries to maintain the road themselves, but these fixes are temporary with the means that they have. So, on attachment, there's an attachment in your board docs from Five County AOG. It says the challenge will be in developing a plan for future maintenance, so it would be understood that perhaps there should be a road maintenance plan. Once you get these repaired and fixed and they're all up to speed, there should be a plan. The board has historically offered funding for planning prior to funding the entire road, but their roads are in need, and there's a lot of potholes, quick deterioration of the existing streets, and there are drainage issues.
Introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Mayor David Roberts.
And it's like Candace just said, there are a few issues, maintenance issues, that we've been considering. If we have to pledge our future BNC road funds towards some type of a loan, that would take out of play our maintenance plan. That's kind of what we had planned to use those road funds for, maintenance. We put forth, what's it been, 8 years ago, I think, we partnered with the county, and we did a chip seal over the existing roads at the time. That worked for a while, but just due to the nature of the soil down there, the sand, the expanding clay, chip seal has a tendency, especially on the edges, to just crumble and go away. So we're hoping that with this proposal that we can get something a little more stable, so that an asphalt based, actual road rather than just a chip seal. The drainage issues we're having, I think at least in there we're wanting to raise the road, put the road up, the 2 inches of the asphalt product. That would take care of part of our drainage issues. We've also gone through and made some cuts, if you will, through the road and cemented some drainages in and cut along the sides of the road to get the water off of the edges, help with the crumbling. But we're kind of at, it takes so long to build up the BNC road funds to keep re-chip sealing the roads that we're kind of out of options, so we're coming to you folks for a little bit of help on that.
Thank you, Mayor. Questions from the board? Yes, Mayor Norton.
I'm sorry, I'm not very
familiar.
Is this a road that's used to get to Bryce Canyon?
It's actually not the main road. Our main road through town is Highway 12, and the state takes care of that. But there are tourists that travel our town roads. So, but no, it's not the main road to get to Bryce Canyon.
Okay. And the county has helped you in the past with the chip and seal. Are they able to help you at all with this project?
What they've been done historically is brought their equipment in and helped us put the chip seal down. We pay for the fuel costs and the cost of all of the materials. With this, the county doesn't have the equipment to lay asphalt. They generally contract that out.
Questions from the board? Yes, Commissioner Hoffman.
Another question, going back to the application. Was it on the capital approval list for through your AFB down there? The project, you know what I'm saying, for your AFB?
You know, that list the five counties was using, right? Yeah, it has been on that list. We dealt with Gary the Risky a little bit on that, but so far it's gone nowhere.
Okay, I have another question for you. They're not supporting that. Why is the AFG not supporting this project?
You know, I'm not sure. I just got the minutes from the steering committee about a week ago and read that. I have no answer for that. It's possible because it's, you know.
Possible because it's going to go to the maintenance of it in the future. We don't have money for that, but I'm not sure. I can't really answer that for you here.
Keith.
Mayor Roberts, you mentioned that your plan was to use DNC road funds for maintenance. Can you talk to us a little bit more about your road maintenance plan? Do you have that in writing, and are you using a certain amount every year, or do you save for X number of years and then do maintenance in Y years, and does that plan include major replacement and additions to road as necessary? So what detail is that plan? Is that in your head, or is it in writing?
Part of that is has been written down. It is still in process because we haven't had to deal with an asphalt type of road yet. Everything we've ever had has just been either gravel or chip seal. So we're still researching what the maintenance on it is. What we do know is that with BNC road funds that we have coming in, we will have enough to crack seal and do some maintenance on edges of the roads and some patch fill if it's needed every year on an annual basis or whenever it's needed. BNC Road Fund will cover that. We have not looked into like a major repair or replacement of a certain stretch of road. We haven't checked into that to see if the BNC Road Fund would cover that or not.
So are you actively working with the Five County Association on that plan?
The city councilman that's in charge of our roads has been working directly with them.
Thank you.
Susan Nye.
Mayor Roberts, in your meeting minutes from the public meeting October 12th, there's indication that you may take this as a loan of 7.5% for 10 years. Are you in the position to do that?
Not with the full $350,000. The discussion on that, our roads department councilman thought that we may be able to do that with the BNC road funds as payment, but as Candace mentioned, that is not enough to cover it.
Then you don't have a help?
No.
You have the money though, that's where the position was.
So, Mayor, you're changing over to, if I'm following correctly, you're changing over to asphalt.
Yeah.
However, you don't have a maintenance plan in place, and you don't have an idea of what future maintenance costs will be.
No, not a complete idea of that, no. Commissioner Winterson.
Step out and I would think that because I think that this kind of it's not a full application. I would spend most of the place from then and go back and develop their road plan and what their cost was going to take to maintain this road and consider half grant, half loan on this. Because if they don't have enough skin in the game, they really don't have enough to maintain the asphalt once it's down. So I think that they need to develop some kind of plan going forward to be able to maintain. So that's my motion to put it on that.
Yeah, motion from the panel, Commissioner Ransom.
I'd like to second that. And also, I think we need some more discussion with the five county AOG level. I think the whole issue had to do with their ability to maintain the investment once it was made down. So that's
let's try to figure out how to help this community. If you've been through that part of the world over there, if you look at a community that's definitely in need, Henryville would reflect that. So let's try to help out the system.
Okay. Motion second to put on the pending list. Any further discussion on that motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? You got your marching orders. Let's get some more information on those items, and we'll have you back shortly.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Looks like we're to the town of Rockville. Invite those representing that application to come up to the table this time and turn the time over to Candace and Jack.
The town of Rockville has a funding request as a $467,000 grant. They are putting $91,765,000 into it. They have a Federal Highway Commission grant for $2,330,750. I don't know if that's in place. They have some UDOT funding of $100,000. I don't know if that's in place. The construction of this bridge was done by the National Park Service in 1924, and it's the only remaining vehicular Parker Drew Truss Bridge in the state of Utah. It's one lane. It is stated to be the only good crossing for several residential farms. This project is commissioned by the town. It wants to be going from a 14-ton load-bearing bridge to a 25-ton rating to carry emergency and garbage collection vehicles. My question would be, could a new bridge accommodate that need at a reduced cost? I don't know. The estimate and the description is a UDOT document. The deck is listed as good and the superstructure is satisfactory, but the paint system has failed. The abutment concrete is sound and free of spalling, which means it's not peeling, it's not flicking away, and no noticeable cracking. The joints at the ends of the deck, however, have failed and are non-existent, which is kind of critical. The roller bearings are frozen and corroded, and I believe there are pictures in here. In your board docs to show that. They're going to try and repair it after Christmas so the bridge lights can stay because those are Christmas lights. It is a strong preference of the town and the State Historical Preservation Office that this structure remains a functional piece of infrastructure. And the cost breakout is on page 16. The questions I would have would be the status of the applicant cash. Number two, under its land ordinance, Rockville does not permit commercial uses in any of its seven zones, but does allow home occupations under conditional use permits. Number three, the Fife County AOG chose not to endorse this project at their October 11, 2017 review meeting, and my question would be why? The applicant has already begun spending federal funds on this project. Yes. Public hearing for a loan or a grant to fund the anticipated overrun on the Rockville Bridge rehabilitation. What Fife County AOT has said is the project consistent with local and regional plans, and they say yes, local, but no regional. Is the project a planning project? No. And alternatives have been discussed and are being considered as to the material used for the decking and on the bridge. Some of the materials have been indicated to do increased noise and to nearby homes. My question would be, what is the final decision on the decking? And I will turn the time over to the board to further questions.
So that you can introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Pam Leach, the mayor of Rockville.
Any specific answers to those questions that Candace raised or what you want to say about the application?
As to funding, the federal funds are in place. Our match, required match for those federal funds are in place. We have a state funds, $100,000 is already in place. We currently have about $25,000 in our bridge fund, and we just received a $75,000, a pledge for a $75,000 grant from the George and Dolores Eccles Foundation for additional work that's come up on this. The reason that we're here for this request is that UDOT determined that the load rating, which is currently at 14 tons, actually should be at 6 tons. So our design team that's currently working on this has now had to look at what work would need to be done to bring the bridge up to the required 25-ton load rating that was a requirement for our federal funding. So they have found they can do that, but it is going to be an additional cost to us. They're still working, crunching the final numbers, but this, what we've applied for to you is what their current estimation is. One other question, I'm sorry, you did ask, mention about the deck and noise. The deck, the choice on the deck has been made to go with a glue lam wood deck, which would be more in keeping what was originally on the bridge. It will satisfy the noise issue with residents that are nearby. It has a life expectancy consistent with other types of decking. It also helps with the load rating, the reduction of the bridge to help with the load rating issue.
Okay, questions from the board? Commissioner Ogden.
Yes, I have some questions about the five counties of AOG and county endorsement project. I understood that there was also a bridge that proposed, a new bridge, the old bridge, keeping the old bridge as a historic path, right away for lights and pedestrians, and that's why did you go this other direction?
For several reasons. One, if you've been to Rockville on that road, Bridge Road is a very narrow road with residents on either side. The bridge that was proposed as a new bridge was a two-lane road. Trying to place that next to one of the proposals was putting it next to the historic bridge so that could remain. That would have impacted several residences. Removing the bridge, the historic bridge, was not an option for the town because of its historic nature. The town looked at the site of that bridge and a new bridge. Again, those are narrow roads, and trying to put in a new two-lane bridge that would be impacting the residences just did not seem prudent. We are currently, at our previous meeting last month, we passed a transportation plan, and we are currently looking at a new map. We're currently looking at locations for a new transportation corridor to match up with some of the county's plans, the region's plans for possible transportation improvements in the area. Again, it's our feeling that a new bridge in a different location would be more appropriate. So at the time when these fundings were being looked at, rehabilitating our historic bridge was what the town felt it was most important to it.
Mr. Lowry.
I mean, is there documentation where the town owns the bridge? Or something that we need with the Park Service? Or how does it ever transfer to the
town? I believe there is documentation from the park transfer ownership to the town. I don't know exactly when that happened. It may have been when they incorporated, but I do believe there is documentation to that effect. They have taken no responsibility for the pitch for some time, and we've asked several times for assistance in maintaining the bridge, and the park is struggling with their own financial maintenance issues, so since it has been given to the town, it's our baby.
In spite of their difficulties with finances, I think it's important to have the documentation or know for sure that you want it.
And
in spite of, you know, not with your
I want to help, and that those issues be coming in at some point, and we have some experience with that.
And I can certainly have our town clerk locate those documents, but I'm fairly sure that those are in existence in our town records.
Mr. Rondon?
Just reading through a lot of your engineering work, it looks like to me you have a lot of unanswered questions.
Yes.
Yes. Flooding and adjusted plates were weathered, and they're trying to determine whether they can be held for 25 tons, which trying to get that, I guess, so that bridge. It just seemed like there's a lot of unanswered questions.
Currently, our design team is working with UDOT and has some design engineering that's with UDOT being reviewed. And what I have been told by our design team is that their engineering has been approved as being able to accommodate the work to be done to get to the 25-ton level.
Having a bridge like the Kern County and they chose to have the bridge remain, I think that you really ought to consider replacing the bridge totally with a new bridge in place, and it'll be cheaper than trying to do what we're doing. I'm not in favor of this because it's costly, and if those that want to preserve it want to come up with the money, then I'm all for it to help them, but I'm one that would not vote to go in this direction.
Just for the record, when the original application was made for federal funding, the cost for a new bridge was $3.2 million, so it was actually more, and I know we're creeping up to that with rehabilitation, but that was their estimate at that time, so
our bridge, we took it and moved it and reused it. To do all of that, roller and everything, it would not quite have been. But you're right, sometimes things are cheaper, but you're still going to have a narrow bridge. It's not going to make any difference. But I really think that you have to go back and really prepare and get a plan in place. This will be a burden to future generations to try to make.
Keith, and then Mayor
Norton. Mayor Leach, just to echo a little bit what Commissioner Winterson is saying, Commissioner Ogden, I'm not sure that the engineering review solved all of the problems or answers all of the questions that I have at this point, and the concern being is that we could put this money in and we still wouldn't have the structural strength that we need to call this bridge good for the next 25, 50 years or whatever. My concern is we put the money in and 5-10 years down the road we have to put in hundreds of thousands or $1 million more to keep it going, whereas with the new bridge we have those assurances. So again, based on the information that I'm looking at, I just don't have that assurance, and it's not that I'm opposed to preserving this bridge. I mean, I've been there several times, and I think it's wonderful, and I'd love to see that happen, but I have concerns that it will be a money pit, much like the house I live in. And then I have a question for Mr. Zanotti. Do you have any information from UDOT on their evaluation that might resolve some of my concerns?
We had a tour of this bridge by UDOT engineers, professionals last year. And based on the findings that we had, the personnel review of that, we ended up with the talking department, the fitness partners, and then once the visit to come, they sent their crew come back and review the bridge. And of course, Mayor is right. She has kind of inherited this trial. And this preservative bridge goes long. Discussion today what to do with it, preserve it, remove it, move it, make a new one, all the aspects of it. But based on the review of the UDOT, the federal partners, they'll come to the conclusion it's a good place to preserve historically. It's a good asset of the community. But the same concern that you have, the commission would have been that is it possible to do something better, something that will leave opportunities for better use. Mayor is correct, and the designated some other locations for the new bridge. But it's challenging to find the location and try to satisfy the residents, just like anything else. We love the new bridge, but not in my backyard. I love crossover, but not on my property. Those are the challenges that they're facing. So in lieu of finding new location, new bridge, this has become the at least chosen one for that point of their time, the history, to preserve it, to upgrade it. UDOT engineers have assured us that they can do it. They can improve the rollers and the rollers and the hinges, and they can make sure that they use the low capacity goes to 25. And based on that funding, the federal government offered that kind of grant. That's much I know.
And just to add to that, one of the other requirements of the federal grant was that the renovation, the rehabilitation would make the bridge viable for at least 30 years. So what we're doing is at least that. What we've been told is that with these renovations, they would expect the bridge to be usable for longer than that.
Thank you. I feel much better now.
Dear Norton.
That actually answered my question.
Yes, Commissioner Lyle.
Do you know why the AOG did not support it? Maybe for the reasons that we just talked about here in terms of utility, it's kind of a question about what you might want, but also what you would need. In that regard, we have other priorities.
I can assure you that the federal government didn't want to pay that much money unless they knew that they can preserve and they can remodel, they can do it capacity-wise to bring it up. And they've already allowed mayor to use part of the money that we have already in the bridge. And the UDOT is working in conjunction with the Boeing Engineering database to make sure that we do go there, because they have commitments in the federal government.
And hoping I can assure you, we do take it seriously that this is a single lane bridge. It is a historic bridge. The town is looking at a new location. With a lot of effort. I'm currently talking with homeowners, property owners. We do have property owners that have shown a willingness to work with us. So I feel that we will be able to set up a future transportation corridor that we can work on, putting a new bridge in a new location that will handle increased traffic. We'll connect to SR9. This is another big issue at Bridge Road. It's a very narrow road. It's a narrow part of SR9. Funneling a lot of traffic on that connector without any turn lanes, merge lanes, and so on. We consider that to not be looking at our needs properly. A new location, several of the three new locations we're looking at possibly working with would provide room for proper turn lanes, merging lanes, visuals, looking at the traffic coming up SR9. And as I'm sure you know, with the increased visitation to Zion National Park, the traffic on SR9 increases all the time. So a new transportation corridor is high priority on our list of projects. But this one is important to us, and we'd like to get it finished so we can move on to other projects. Thank you.
Before I turn up some time to Mr. Galecki, can you talk about your ability to take loans instead of grants on this project?
I'm sorry?
Your ability to take loans instead of grants on this project.
We couldn't handle all of this money as a loan. It would be a real challenge for us, so we appreciate as much of it as possible as a grant. As I said, we're still working on raising funds ourselves, donations from community and so on. But the town has a limited budget, and we do have a road maintenance plan in place and using, I don't know if we can even use the MC road funds to pay our loan on the bridge. But it would be a loan would be a challenge.
Mayor, can you take it 50-50? 50 grand, 50 loan? If you want to go home with the money in your hands, that will be the option to consider. Even though you have many supporting documents saying federal, state, and Echo Foundation supporting you, you have your own in cash contribution.
What would be the interest rate that you'd be offering us on that?
50-50. Where do you want to go? 2.5%?
So, if you pull up the sheet, 2.5%, 50-50 would be about $15,000 a year.
Could DOT be challenged to go beyond the 100,000?
They will do quite a bit of engineering work for them supporting the mayors and supporting locals. But the money wise, no. At this point, I'm sure they have another application if somebody comes up.
I guess I was not making most of that, struggling between whether pending or denying, to be honest. And leaning towards denying the application in that to go back, they would have to answer all those various questions. As far as you got and answer those and look hard at the other option of realignment or putting it elsewhere. But now you brought up, a loan, and I think I'd make a motion just to put it on pending, but to actually really consider, Can you put it on pending with a motion of saying 50% loan? Or you have to go with the exact?
You could go priority with 50-50 if you come back, having looked at their finances. So you could put it on the priority list, 50-50 loan, and you have to round it in your 1,000. So I'm suggesting a $460,000 request, a $230,000 each, which is 50-50.
So you could be less grand. That would be a $234,000 loan and $233,000 grant. That would be kind of the 50, but we consider a 50-50 split.
Okay. So I'll make a motion that if the 50-50 split of $234,000 loan at 2.5% and $233 in grants. Just the idea that they go back and answer the various questions and look hard at what they really want to do with the bridge.
If you want to go 2% or 2.5%?
2.5%.
I think 2.5%. 20 years? Is that...
20 years becomes 22,000. Oh, sorry, it becomes 14,000.
Yes, 14,000.
20 years cannot pledge the MCU.
That's about 10 years.
15.
So the motion on the table is a $234,000 loan, 2.5%, 10 years, and a $233,000 grant. Yeah, they placed on the priority list. A second from Commissioner Lila. If you place on the priority list, you can come back and we can kind of talk about those terms of what you've gone back and done your homework on when it comes to the funding meeting. So that motion is in order with a second. Any further discussion of that motion? Mayor Norton.
Sorry, I might have missed this, but since it is on the National Historic Registry, I'm sure you've already contacted them or the state, and they are not able to help in any way, or they are already in the state.
Further discussion on that motion? Okay. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that's on the priority list as stated in that motion, and we'll have that discussion at the meeting.
Thank you. And when we get our final from our design team and approved by UDOT, the cost and engineering and all of that, we'll make sure that you have that prior to coming back to that meeting.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, next item, Southeastern Association of Local Governments. Like to the table this time, and turn the time over to Candace for the staff reading on this project.
Southeastern Utah Association of Local Governments has a request before the board of $50,000 in grant funding. This is for two new vehicles, one for Emory County Food Bank and one for the San Juan Heat Program. The Southeastern Utah Association of Local Governments are eligible as an applicant, but they will have to own these vehicles and maintain them. It can't be a pass-through to those entities. So what is on the table is a Ford Fusion. It's listed for a price of $20,000 for the San Juan Heat. They've received funding for a vehicle for outreach to drive on the San Juan roads, which were not paved and the cars damaged. So we funded them a while back through Southeastern. That road, that's the difficult on vehicles. The San Juan Road, do something, Commissioner. they cover vast areas. That's just a fact. San Juan is big. And would like to request a new vehicle to ensure that there's, you know, safety while traveling. The F-150, there's a bid for it for the Emory Food Bank, $24,473. It's used for daily grocery delivery. Local grocery stores provide food. They deliver it to the pantries and the families that might need. There are 7 homebound clients that require delivery. That's what this was used for, and a myriad of other things. Southeastern Utah ALG has searched for grants to purchase vehicles. There are none, and the donations do not cover the cost of new vehicles. Southeastern Utah Association of Local Governments has a vehicle maintenance fund replacement program which generates money on a per mile basis of 22 cents a mile. Does that seem like enough? Anyway, approximately $5,000 annually.
Want to introduce yourselves for us?
My name is Michael Bryant. I'm the regional planner at the Association of Governments, but I'm taking that hat off to represent the ALG directly. Because our director is unable to be here, she is actually at the Workforce Service Building in Salt Lake City. So, anyway, and then I'll let these two introduce themselves.
I'm Morgana Wolf, and I'm the supervisor for the SEU and ALG.
I'm Renee Rasho, I'm the heat program specialist for the ALG.
And I'll turn time over to Merlina to talk about the projects.
So for the heat vehicle in San Juan, like you said, we did have the vehicle down there in poor condition, and we felt the safety of the girls driving around down there. The roads are paved now, so that's a lot better situation. We utilize the vehicle to travel to local chapter houses, senior centers, outreach locations to help the San Juan residents receive help for their utility bills. A lot of them don't have transportation, medical issues. There's a lot of elderly people that we help. And so we just really feel like that it would be great if we could have a new vehicle for the village.
So I have a couple questions before we get to the board. Knowing we have an active RFP on some food money that you could apply for the food truck, and I can just refer you directly to that. I think we have money available that can accommodate that, and would rather have it done out of that funding source and have the sport have to deal with it. The heat program vehicle, and I don't know, and typically we can't, you know, make a capital purchase out of the heat program, which is another program we administer in our division, but you can't expense the vehicle so that you know, if you bought it and you extend the mileage to our grant, I mean, that could pay for the vehicle as well. So those are a couple ideas off the top of my head without even having to give a grant out of this that could accommodate your need for vehicles. But could you speak to that or those possibilities?
We're perfectly willing to, you know, receive the funds elsewhere if that's the action of the board. We weren't aware of the RFP for the food truck vehicle, so we're more than willing to do something of that nature. As far as the heat program vehicle, I don't know, Marlene, would you have more information you want to talk about there? As far as you didn't mention about expensing out for the heat vehicle, we do that as you're aware of with our maintenance fund. Whether or not that's enough, that's I guess the question for our director, and as to whether or not how much we could actually expense that as well. But that would definitely be an option that we could look into as well.
So I would suggest that I'll have my staff work with you on a couple of these options and different ways to deal with it outside of this particular grant request. So I may just make a plea to the board that we put this on the pending list while we kind of work through those different options.
I'll make
the motion. I'll second. Okay, there's a motion by Commissioner Lytle and a second from Councilman Farrell to put it on the pending list. Any further discussion of that motion?
Yes,
okay, Commissioner Adams.
I just want to remind the board that winter is fast approaching. We have elderly residents. We have people that may end up without assistance or heat if we take a long time to deal with it. I would just plead with you, Jonathan, to either solve this problem ASAP or not wait until February to act on this request. I think you're gonna put some people in danger if you do.
So I think we can take care of, we can do the due diligence here within the next month, before the next board meeting, and if we have to come back, we'll do it at the next board meeting.
Okay.
And sensitivity to this current, the assumption was it would be quicker than this board.
Yes. I think we can solve some of these issues in short order.
These folks do a great job with the heat program, and it's something that's needed when you live out in the middle of nowhere, which is where most of these people live.
Yeah, I don't think we just need that. We're very supportive of the program. I think we can take care of it. A couple other ways that don't have to involve CID funds.
Thank you.
Okay, that motion's in order. All in favor of that motion of placing on the pending list, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so we'll get to work on that. I'll have my staff get in touch with you, and we'll see what we can solve between now and the next board meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The question is, while we're between subjects, just process oriented. So, would that have been something that typically was short of what you had to get the commissioners in San Juan to mention? Would that could have been a suspended vote?
Yeah, there's an urgent need. I think the board has to make that motion. Yes. Okay, it's 10:23 right now. We have to check out by 11 o'clock. I know we've got a few more items on the agenda. I suggest we take a break at this time or reconvene at 10:40 to get everybody about 15 minutes to check out and tidy up, and then we'll finish out the agenda for the rest of the day at 10:40.
Jeff, what are you trying to say?
Yeah, what are you
trying to say?
you're a bit of it. I'm going
Okay, our next project that was on the pending list is the town of Kingston. We'd invite them to come up to the table this time, and we'll turn the time over to Candace for the staff briefing on this project. This is something we have seen before.
Yes. The board has reviewed this. The board, as you can see in the memorandum that's included in your board docs, you can access it. The town of Kingston has come in. When they originally, the original request was $650,000. The board asked them to go back and consider things like operation and maintenance, how large this building is, do some downsizing a little bit of it, some cut some things out, and they did. The items omitted from the original request are the kitchen, concrete flat work, six-foot waterway, 3-inch asphalt surface, don't know where that went, paint striping, repair and replacing the sprinkler heads and contingency was reduced. Also, the engineering costs were reduced, and so the request now is $581,000. This building is for a town hall addition on an historic building and a remodel. So we'll let Kingston speak to that. One more thing, the Magi, state Magi is $44,268. Kingston's Magi is
$28,121.
Ryan, you have to turn it on.
Thank you.
Ryan Sudwick with Science Over Engineering.
Bill Sudwick, I'm the mayor of Kingston.
As Candace said, we came in, I think it was in the spring of this year, and presented this, and you asked us to go back and relook at the size of the, and some of the exterior stuff that we did, and we went and took out everything we could have on the exterior. The problem I run into when we start trying to reduce the size of the addition is this building is not ADA compliant at all. And when we try and fit the restrooms in there without any addition, there's just no way to make it work without destroying some of the architecture stuff on the building. Also, we've got restrooms that we'd like to put on the outside of the building so that the building doesn't have to be opened when we have family reunion at the park. Let everybody run through the building. We'd rather have built a restroom on the outside.
Okay. Questions from the board on this project? It's every expression in everybody's memory, I'm sure, from the screen when we reviewed it.
I know I was, you know, I wanted to see it reduced, and I see, you know, the thought process was under the current plan to, you know, minimize, you know, from the current plan. I guess the maybe what I'm looking at is you also have a remodel. So if you look at the cost between, you know, break it down of, you know, just to restore the building, and rather than just cutting a little bit, did you look at the project at all as far as really, you know, cutting back considerably, or just what they? I guess the question is, sorry, I'm all over. Do you know what just the restoration of the building cost?
Yes, hopefully you got this. I actually broke it into the renovation and the addition. You've got about $200,000 plus or minus on the addition, and then the renovation is $214,000, about 50-50.
Ryan, what document is that?
What's that?
What document did you submit?
It's the Kingston Town Hall
Thank you.
The existing building, as we're looking at this, the electrical system, as you can imagine, we're talking about.
Well, it's all around the turn of the century and maybe a little prior.
So the electrical system is to say the least, scary when you get up in there, and that needs to be done as a minimum, and then it's not doing. Candace and I talked earlier, and she said it's probably cheaper to build a new building. Well, it probably is, but then you have an old building, what are you going to do with the old building? You're just going to let it fall apart with no windows, break windows up. I don't know. It's something you guys deal with, I'm sure, on every day. We just did one for a reason. Same questions come up. My technical unit, the store register. They're not going to let you tear it down. So you've got to maintain and do something.
When you say turn of the century, you're meaning 1900 rather than 2000. We're kind of getting far enough away from the turn of the century. Turn of the century has a whole new meaning.
It was built in the late 1890s or early 1900s. It was built prior to electricity. And there was a generator building that was built with it to generate electricity for this building. So that's a approximately. I don't have an exact date.
Okay. Well, I wanted to clarify that it was 100 plus years old rather than 17. Thank you. Mr. Donati.
Ron, what is this information about the ship will have a signed case number 17-0406 for determination?
Right.
When it's going to be determining this? We've already been designated as a historical.
We're working with them right now, and we will be working with them through this whole project. They haven't declared it a historical building, although it is right now. They're aware of it, and we're working with them.
So, how much of the remodeling is going to be in place before defacing the historical part of the building?
Well, what we're going to do, the only real change is the restrooms and the kitchen area. We're going to, on the original building, we're trying to keep it as intact as we can without destroying the historical value of it. The restrooms are outside of this table right here now, so obviously they don't need ADA. We've got to do something with those, and we'll make those into closets and expand the hallway, or expand that into the kitchen. So this, most of the original building will stay just the way it is, other than it would be new electricity.
The access to the new building will be through an existing door out of the old building.
We can use that existing building to build on.
So, change the building.
Right. Other questions from the board? Yes, Commissioner Lytle.
So, the only participation in this project is CID.
Actually, we've gone back to the board, and I told Candace earlier today that the board has agreed to come up with $10,000, which is basically half of the town's budget per year, to throw into this project and try and get it off the ground and get it moving. So, as Candace said, the Magi is a pretty small thing to do. But they're really throwing an app for their new budget.
I guess we're facilitating the question more than recognizing that major difference is either to the Schuylkill staff or any other sources that wasn't sent to look for other grants.
We have a couple of other grants. I have talked a little bit to Schuylkill, and they've kind of just said probably not. So, but I haven't formally applied.
Mayor Norton, and then Commissioner Norton.
We may have discussed this previously, but what is your plan for O&M on this building?
Well, they have the $20,000 a year, and right now, basically, it's a as most small towns are, it's a volunteer to really do what they can and make it work. And that's how they get to their heads.
No funding being built for any of that in the future, or a plan for further renovations or improvements?
Well, you and I will be gone before they need any more renovations.
I'm thinking of when I'm gone.
This should last them 50, 60 years. I don't see it. Unless there's a huge new engagement, then I don't see that.
I understand that. I know we're not as small of a community, but I do know that a lot of people like the new buildings and like to have those in their communities, but they don't understand the O&M that come with that over the years.
Right. And we develop that as part of our engineering, so we develop that.
Again, all this is kind of a heavy lift, and I appreciate these little towns. And it seems like a lot of these little towns certainly get stuck with these buildings that Schiphol actually wants to put on their dock as historical buildings. They start out obviously as a school, and then they go to a church, and then pretty soon it ends up in the city, and then they're stuck with all the maintenance and everybody else's abandonment. I realize that Kingston's a small community and they don't have a lot down there. They don't even have a revenue source other than like $720,000. So I feel for their situation here. If they're willing to put in at least $10,000 in this, I'd make a motion to approve it as a project. Also, understanding Schiphol puts these positions on these small communities.
Second motion.
I raised my hand.
Yes, you did raise your hand, Commissioner. So, the motion on the table is to approve the $581,000 grant contingent on the town providing $10,000. Is that what I understand, Commissioner Hogan?
571
would be 571. Make it 571?
Right,
yeah. Okay, so $571,000, that would include $10,000 cash from the town to complete the project. That's a second from Commissioner Mattson on that. Any further discussion of that motion?
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner Adams.
I feel the same way that Tudor does, and I think we're asking quite a bit to ask them to come up with half of their budget. I'd like to make a substitute motion that we approve the request without the $10,000.
I'll second that.
Okay, substitute motion to approve a $581,000 grant. And seconded by Councilman Farrell. Further discussion of that substitute.
Substitute. Or do we have to vote on this one first?
I think we're continuing to substitute. We may run out of the motion for secondary, so that by the time we're all said and done, but yes, Mr.
So this is a discussion, or is this a motion?
You can make the substitute motion, but you can discuss the motion on the table. The substitute motion on the table.
I guess what I struggle with is, I know it's a small town, I guess I'm struggling with the, I understand the renovation, and I understand, looking quickly at these things, that I just don't know if there's a demonstration of use and such. My substitute motion would be not to have to take out the addition, which is $200,000, and the rest of the restoration. So it would be approximately $381,000, and the focus would be is the renovation.
Okay. Hold on, this motion on the table. This is a second substitute motion, and that is for a $381,000 grant. Is there a second to that second substitute? A second. Okay, hey, we've got a lot of stuff on the table. So that is seconded. Okay, so discussion to that motion. Do you have a comment?
Yes. The reason that we didn't take out the addition and just do what you're saying is because we can't figure out a way to make the bathrooms work in the hotel without completely destroying the existing architecture and changing the whole layout of everything that's there. We have kind of bounced things off the ship a little bit and and this seems to be the best fit as far as drinking everything else.
Yeah, but so they had the bathrooms on it, cost $200,000 to have the bathrooms on.
Well, no, but if you don't put that addition out there, you're going to be $100,000 in the bathrooms, whether they get some new stuff. Right now, the town clerk, if you want to call it her office, is a office. It has no way of locking, it has no way of doing anything but just shutting the curtain on it. So, you know, we're just trying to get it so that when people come in, they're not fighting, that we're of all directives and everything else. I don't think we can do what you're saying and make it ADA accessible is what I'm asking.
Okay, any further discussion that second substitute motion?
I suggested the substitution last time that you were here on, but the honey bucket is cheaper. That's a ship old problem.
Can I dump that honey bucket on the UDOT right away?
Okay, the motion before us, second substitute, is a $381,000 grant. If there's no further discussion, we'll call the question. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Raise your hands, please. Mr. Galecki, Commissioner Lytle, Mr. Winterton, and Treasurer Danson. This is for a $381,000 grant. This is Greg's second substitute motion. Those opposed by show. Okay.
Bruce is
581. That's the first substitute. We got to let him vote the second substitute
first. This is Greg.
Okay, so let me call this again. This is Mr. Galecki's motion seconded by Treasurer Danson for a $381,000 grant. This is to remove the addition and to only focus on the renovation. So all in favor of that motion, again, by raising hands. Okay, Mr. Galecki and Treasurer Danson. All opposed to that motion? That would be the remainder of board members present.
All the free spenders.
Commissioner Winterton, Commissioner Lytle, Councilman Farrell, Commissioner Adams, Mr. Zanotti, Mayor Norton, Commissioner Madsen, and Commissioner Ogden. All opposed. That motion fails. So we're back to the first substitute, which is a $581,000 grant, as stated in the application. If there's no further discussion of that motion, let's take a vote there. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, Mr. Galecki opposes that. And that motion does carry. So that will be placed on the priority list, $581,000 grant, and we'll be deciding that at the February funding meeting.
Thank you.
Should I ask that minutes reflect that the honey bucket motion failed?
Did it fail? We should have the ratio.
We could even call it the UDOT honey bucket.
Okay, on to item number 6, which is board member discussion and action items. We'll start with the Community Development Office planning update. I'll turn some time over to Keith. And I think Kyle's got a few things to show us as well.
We do. Thank you, John. We'll be very brief. We respect your time and appreciate the efforts you make to be here. We formalized in Housing and Community Development the Community Development Office. The acronym, of course, is CDO. So we just wanted to let you know that. It really doesn't change a lot other than if you hear the acronym CDO, we're talking about the Community Development Office. To tell you quickly exactly what that is, it includes this board and the accompanying funding, of which you're all very familiar. It includes our Community Development Block Grant, or CDBG program, State Small Cities program, which is a funded federally through HUD. I think most of you are probably familiar with that. It's been around for a long time. It includes our rural planners, and you're all very familiar with them. And of quickly here. I'll turn time over to Kyle to give you a quick update on what they're doing. Unless I use the word quick twice. Also included with that is the private activity bond funding, which our office managed historically. Several years ago, it was transferred over to the Governor's Office of Economic Development. They came to the realization that we knew all along that it was an affordable housing program, not an economic development program, so they've given it back. So we're excited to have that back, and that provides funding for a large affordable housing project. And then we have the revitalization funds in the Uinta Basin. These are funds that go to Uinta, Deschene County, and of course the Ute Tribe. Ron Winterton and I sit on that board. And then we have the Navajo Revitalization Fund, which is for the Utah Navajos, and Bruce Adams and I sit on that board. So that's the Community Development Office. Those are the programs we currently have. And again, our objective is obviously provide funding sources, but also to help with any other assistance that communities in Utah need, municipal administration, community development office. Our philosophy is one that, you know your community if you're a community leader, you know your county if you're a county commissioner. We don't want to come in and dictate, we've got X, Y, Z, and take it or leave it. We want to work with you to say, what are your needs and how can we help you fill those? It's a time-consuming process, but we think that's one thing that's really going to bear fruit in the long run. So that's what we're doing, and we appreciate your support and all that we do. And again, I'll turn just a few minutes over to Kyle to give an update on where our planning group is at.
So really briefly, I presented in June, and we typically will present in June a little bit longer for the retreat, kind of explaining our cuisine, where we come from, all that sort of stuff. So I'll bypass that for now. If you have questions, we're happy to respond to that. I have copies of the document that we've been promoting recently that I wanted to share with you. So I'll take just a second to pass that around, kind of explain why we're working on this and kind of what our game plan is with this and some of our other initiatives that we have going on. So just 1 second while I pass this out.
Okay, I'll do that, Kyle. You talk, I'll pass.
So this document, as we work with the RPPs and with communities, we recognize that the capital facility planning that's occurring, the capital improvement planning that's occurring in a lot of our communities is not very adequate or detailed. And it's not that it can't be, it's understandable that there's time constraints. A lot of our smaller communities have a lot of fires and they're constantly burning and they're just chasing fire after fire after fire. And there's not a lot of time to look ahead. So our intent is to try and help community leaders start to look ahead in terms of their capital asset planning so that they can really bring the best project forward to the community impact board, as well as make the best use of their funds to provide the services to their residents. This is just an example of one of the things that we've got going. We have companion documents that deal with other issues that are related to capital improvement planning. One is operations and maintenance. We went out and interviewed a lot of very experienced city leaders, kind of aggregated their responses for best practices for operations and maintenance, and put that into a guide similar to this one. We take these documents and these ideas and concepts, we take them to communities, we take them to RPPs, we take them to conferences, and we present them to community leaders with the intent of providing them with a simple, easy guide for how to take a next step in implementing the best practice in their community. You'll notice with this one, it's not extremely detailed. We recognize that for a lot of our communities, something that's extremely detailed is not something that's going to be something they have time to really go through and do. However, with some of these big picture ideas of kind of getting ahead of your capital facility needs, we find that communities are able to really understand where they're at and what they're going to have to do to be prepared to move forward in the future. So, again, this is an example. Like I said, we have others, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions you guys have about these things or go through the guide if that would be of use. But for the sake of time, I'll stop there unless there's questions.
Questions from the board?
I have a question. I just find this very useful. I mean, this was a great project, and I appreciate you taking the time because that is one of the biggest questions I've had for these smaller towns and communities that come into this, is they don't have the resources to help plan for their future. And so this is, I think, a great asset and will really help them.
With the help, and very grateful for all the work you're doing. And then with this kind of stuff, it is critical. There's lots of tools we haven't utilized yet, but getting money to
Our intent is to address those highest priority needs. As we go out and talk to people, we try to aggregate the information and receive back and turn that into our project list looking into the future. I doubt any of you remember, just because I know it's a long time ago, but that was one of the things that I addressed is, you know, where do we get projects and how do we decide where we're going to spend our time. And one of the methods is really just trying to listen to people and understand what they need and where there might be knowledge gaps that exist. And this was a glaring one that we felt really needed to be addressed.
Thank you, Kyle.
Okay. Any more further questions? Thank you, Kyle. And enjoy cruising out at your own leisure.
Just not while you drive.
Thanks.
I do have one last question. You still sending out your monthly RPG email?
Yes. Is it not getting to you?
I guess I haven't got one.
Yeah, there's some other resources that we sent out just this last week that are kind of exciting. We think will be useful.
So I'll check the email.
I'll make sure that you're on there. You're really just
monthly newsletter, all of the community leaders, or just
so we try. There's two different emails. One that updates you guys specifically, like on our different meetings, and it's really detailed on all of the different things that we've done. We assume most people aren't too interested in that, so we don't send that out to everyone. That's kind of our accountability to you guys at our funding board. And then the other email is sent to as many people as we've been able to get their information. So we have about 650. People on our distribution list. That includes state leaders, primarily local leaders, and planning commissioners, other people that we collect as we've gone about the state, and then also that come from the Lieutenant Governor's office.
Okay, thank you, Kyle. We'll move on to item two, Candace.
This is just by way of clarification. It's the what we do with the funds. Thought the board might want to know how we implement some of these items. When you authorize a grant, and it's only a grant, and there's no other funding in it, if it's been large, we would put it in a TTIF account. Most of the time, it's in web grants. Web grants facilitates that, and it is there available by reimbursement. And web grants is a tool, and we look forward to doing electronic funds out of web grants. Right now, unless there's already the town has electronic funds transfer ability in place, it's electronic transfer out of there. Right now, it's going, you know, if you're signing up new or if it's a new grant, they'll be issued a check. Grants and loans are put in a PTIF account with the treasurer. All of your funds go out as a reimbursement. We have to have the invoices to pay, and then they pay the contractor. So that's how it's always been done. Now, if you authorize all grants and there's co-funding in it, then we will utilize a PTIF account because all of the grants are meant to pay for those invoices that come in. In the case of a 50% grant for planning, if their funds aren't put in there, we only reimburse invoices at half. So I didn't know if you were aware of how that goes. I wanted to say that, and interest accrues, but it's recaptured back into the mineral lease fund for use for future projects. So you authorize the amount. That is the amount that the applicant has to utilize, and it's either in a PTIF or it's in web grants. The only difference is if it's all grant, it'll be in web grants. If it's all CID funding grant, it's in web grants. And if it's commingled with other funding, then it is put in a PTIF in the treasurer's office.
Okay.
I don't know if you were all aware of that. We wanted to clarify what we do with the interest. It comes back in and you use it for other projects. Our funding does not be given to anyone. It is by reimbursement. And I wanted to make that clear too, because we have some new board members since we've ever spoken about that. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. But you and the yellow tie.
If we don't get it finished by 2 years contract for the grant,
yeah, it's a 2 year
contract. We have to have a 30 days. We can know this, extend, and how hard it is to get amended.
You can amend it, and it does. We do give them notice. Gail pays attention to when the grant contract expires. When it expires, you can amend it for another year. If it wants to be amended for longer than another year, and you have to have a good reason before it gets amended, it'll come back to the board to extend the contract and reauthorize the funding.
Do you do process and fee, charge of process and fee to amend? No, I haven't.
Okay. It's four signatures. It's not that.
Okay.
It's not that burdensome.
Thank you.
Okay, on to our last item on the agenda. We have kind of two different things to discuss here, and I'd like to invite Seven County Infrastructure Coalition to come up. One is kind of an update on a few some of the items we're working on, and we have some of these items are a little bit sensitive in nature, and so they're. We'll probably have some questions come up of whether this can be discussed in an open meeting or a closed meeting. We have our attorney here that will help guide us through what our obligation is with the board with respect to those items. Even if there gets to be some items that, you know, for whatever reason, folks are uncomfortable having out in the public forum, I know Mike and his group would be happy to meet with any board member on those specific items privately. So, and that can be accomplished. So there are other avenues to obtain further information. So that's the first portion. I want to give them some time to update us on what's going on. The second portion is to talk about our contracts with them, some specific things we've identified, some ambiguity we need clarified with the board. So that will be our second portion. But I'll just flow some time over to Mike and company to give us an update on those items. And I know they've been conferring with our attorney during the break on that, so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to invite Leslie Buehler. She would come up as well. As Leslie is coming up, Leslie is from Crescent Point Energy. And so what we'd like to do is just, there's some information that we would like to be able to present in open session. The majority of what we have is going to be better for closed session, but let's just start with our PowerPoint. We have that. So, you know, I guess one of the things that we would just like to be able to touch base on, we do really appreciate Community Impact Board, what we have in the Community Impact Board. This very first slide, I believe. Get that up here. I require you to take just a minute on the contract itself, and then I'll go into what we have. When the slides get up, the first slide you'll see is from the original CID application. And go ahead and go down one more. Okay, so this was part of the original CID application back in August of 2014, and it outlines, in the first portion, it outlines generally the types of projects that the coalition would be investigating. It talks about a road out of the innovations to I-70 corridor that is still under investigation and consideration. In fact, we have an individual project on that. A railroad spur connecting the Union Basin to rail, that's morphed a little bit from needing to go to two class one railroads to maybe not needing to do that.
Not to go to two.
Right, to one. It originally said two, and then it's morphed a little bit to not having a requirement of two. Passenger rail to Moab, is still under consideration. Other rail spurs, including the rail spur into San Juan County, still under consideration. Joint ventures on coal terminals to secure foreign markets for Utah's coal. I will acknowledge, to my knowledge, that is still under consideration, but is not being handled by the coalition. Pipeline projects to reduce the need for heavy trucks on public roads, to reduce impacts on communities along transportation corridors, still under consideration. And we'll be talking about a variety of these with you, the details today, and also electrical transmission lines. Such generally what was stated in the applications to what the coalition should be looking at. And then you see down toward the bottom, it says request for CID grant of $5 million. And then it has five bullet points. The first is seven county infrastructure assessment. That is still underway and is being completed by Jones and Camille Engineering. Second, identification and ranking of initial projects. The initial projects are still being identified and ranked. Third, technical and engineering services to assist developing identified projects still underway. The fourth, procurement services for joint venture partnerships. The coalition in September entered into a letter of intent with UN Advantage, also entered into a non-disclosure agreement with Sage Energy in August of 2017, so that is still underway. And then staffing, of course, anticipates that there is something ongoing that is happening. If we can go to the next slide is the amendment to the actual contract, very similar as in the scope of work. Thank you. When the contract was initially entered into, and it is kind of detailed. This is one of the longest run-on sentences you'll ever want to see. But at the end, if you look at the last clause, it says, administration and development of infrastructure projects, right there on the bottom line, the second half of that last line. And that is exactly what the coalition continues to do in addition to a number of things that are above. Questions about the scope of application or contract?
Any questions? Looks like at this time.
All right, thank you. Let's go to the next slide. Ken is, we're hoping we can go to closed session because there's some information that we would like to be able to share with the board that we believe falls within the parameters of closed session. This is a slide. We cannot state it well, and I apologize for this. This is a slide that came from the oil study and that pipeline that we've done. But the bottom line here is with every dollar of discount that ends up or change of price, every dollar difference is a little over $6 million of lost revenues in taxation, those kind of things that comes from CRB and other government entities. My understanding is a couple of days ago, the discount is $13, essentially. This one here was showing at $10. It's about $250 million a year to have.
$13 on how much per barrel right now?
$56, $57. So that, you know, that kind of changes because they really do this pretty much on a percentage. And so the higher the oil is, the greater that discount becomes. So there are some old contracts out there. I will not disclose names, but there's a contract I'm aware of that's been ongoing. Even when it was up to $15 a barrel on their discount. So anyway, let's go to the next slide if we can. But anyway, I just want to demonstrate, like that other instrument, the amount of revenue that CID is losing because of the discount. And you'll remember the study that was done some years ago. This was a study a few years ago that was identifying how much money is being lost due to constraints on transportation. And HDR, as I did the study, you'll see there's a low, a mid, and a high range. Following that mid range, close to $30 billion a year of what is estimated in lost revenues coming because of transportation. And I actually, you know, with what's happened since that point in time with the drilling budgets and everything the way they have been, very much discouraged production out in the basin because of those heavy discounts. When the price of oil was higher, it didn't matter quite so much. They still made profits, but when you have those heavy discounts, and you can realize most of these companies that are doing business are out of Houston, and they're looking at the various fields in Oklahoma and North Dakota or Texas or wherever they might be, where do you go? Whatever we can do to address these infrastructure needs and the discount becomes fairly important. Let's go to the next slide. And of course, is there any question or comment on this?
Sure, I'll give you a question.
Explain this discount thing to me just a little bit. I don't follow the oil thing. So.
Yes, thank you. It's a really good question. So what happens is, Western Texas Intermediate, WTI, is a term that is used a lot. And so, and I'm sort of not an expert, but I can, kind of dial it down. WTI would be kind of the base price generally you would have on oil. You can have premium above WTI, or you can go under WTI. Because the oil in the unit base has a hydrocarbon content, the refiners have been using that as the reason to discount that oil 20-25%. And yet the oil has, the actual profits of it is above the grades that generally are graded at WTI. It's a very high oil. In fact, some people are claiming that the base stock on it is premium in the world. And so we get into closed session, we'll talk about that in an appropriate way. So, I'm going to turn the time to Brian on this.
Thank you. So I'm Brian Barton with Johnson Visionary. What you see on the screen and what Eric is passing around is a diagram to help demonstrate where the coalition is on a number of projects. You can see there's a left to right linear progression from project concept to the right side of a completed project and all the steps that come in between. And you can see under each step a list of projects. You can see a number of projects that are on this list. There are 30 other project concepts that were initially evaluated that fell out of the ranking for further consideration by the coalition board. But you can see everything from on the far right side, the Swinging Bridge in Colorado. That's something that we discussed. You've got the San Juan and Daggett County broadband projects, where the coalition has facilitated progress on those projects. We've got the oil pipeline under project evaluation. That's got CID funding support there. The Eastern Utah Regional Connection is another project that CIV has supported. That's the SR-88 to I-70 corridor. And then several other projects we'll have opportunity to discuss in more detail. And each of these projects has its own life, its own detail, funding considerations, potential partners, all of those complexities are woven into each of these project names. And so this was the best way for us to boil it down and show the board that the coalition is actively working on these projects. And these projects are intended to increase mineral lease production, tax revenue, improve the quality of life throughout the coalition boundaries. So wanted to give you that quick snapshot.
Go to the next slide. I wanted to thank Leslie Buehler, actually she called yesterday and solicited, and Crescent Point was aware that we were going to be talking about and one of the projects being a transmission project. But let me just remind the board if I can for a minute. Several years ago, the board approved the first phase of the transmission project, and there's some things that we were able to do that facilitated and helped to get a very critical 2 mile stretch of line built. We took the rest off the table at that time and said, because of current oil prices and things that were going on at that time, that needed to be curtailed. But it was long recognized by the people out in the basin and by industry and by others that there's a critical need for us relating to infrastructure. So, Leslie, if I might, and we'll talk about if there is a project that would relate to Crescent Point, there's a project that would relate also with another project that we want to talk about. But, Leslie, if you would just permit, just tell the board and public a little bit some of what Crescent Point's, what they're doing. I think you're either the largest or second largest producer in the basin at this time. And tell them a little bit about what you guys are doing.
So Crescent Point is the second largest producer in the basin of natural gas and oil. We're currently the leading industry in the basin for our 2 miles horizontal well, which on an average are producing about 1,000 barrels of oil a day. Well, most recently the completion of the well typically produce about 400 to 500 barrels a day. So we're doubling production on our 2 mile horizontal well. So we're looking at the transmission line to electrify a lot of our facilities. It's better all around to electrify still. Not only for cost-wise, but also with environmental impact. And of course, we all know that innovation, I hope we all know that innovation is on the cusp with the Division of Air Quality and obtaining attainment status. So there are non-attainment air quality, and if we acquire an attainment status, that's going to put our permitting not only on Crescent Point as a whole, but every industry out there. Put a real constraint on it. So we want to take a step and move forward with electrifying our facilities to cut down our emissions. And we just support what the Seven County Coalition is doing. We feel that it's important not only for Crescent Point, but of all the industry, mining, oil industry, and even basin, to take a step forward and be environmentally responsible.
Thank you.
We have a question. These two horizontal wells that you're currently working, what type of property are those on? Is it federal, tribal, state land, private properties?
Currently, we're doing a split estate, so we'd be fee simple and tribal land essentially.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, again, with air quality issues and everything out there, the electrification field is so important. As you look at the impacts of air and everything, and to be able to permit wells and everything that happens there. And so that's a little bit of the background. I think, you know, there's certainly that is all public knowledge. And maybe just mention how many wells are you looking up in the next few years?
Our projection for which transmission line that we're talking about would be approximately 120 to 130 wells in the next 3 years.
That transmission line isn't going to be sold to Crescent Point. There's other operators that are still using it.
Crescent Point, right now, we would be trying on, but my understanding is that a lot of other producer end users would be interested in the line.
And so, I guess that's a little bit of a background, but I guess. For the public session, is what I would mention is the coalition has the ability to own, operate, construct utilities, and there's some aspects of that that would be important that the board is interested in, you know, kind of realizing where the coalition is and the stewardship that you all have to ensure that money is being spent appropriately and all those kind of things, and be able to see willing to share confidential information with the board and have authorization to be able to do so. But again, that would be, we visit with legal counsel, and I believe we stay within those confines, but I would just speak to that. So, but I think this is the portion that we would feel comfortable about in the open session.
Thank
you.
comment from the treasurer, then we'll have Ryan kind of walk us through our options here.
Before the treasurer, may I just ask, with the request obviously to take a motion for closed session to go there, would the, in the event we do that, could you stipulate that this either through you or one of you, the reasons specifically, so that it would be included in the motion?
It'll be for real estate exchange and protect proprietary trade secrets that have been divulged to the coalition.
And those fall within the rules of closed session. Thank you.
We'll have Brian walk us through that on behalf of the board, but let me turn it over to the treasurer, and then Brian, you can kind of talk us through our office.
Gentlemen, thanks for coming in today. I just want to stress, I guess, our time is valuable. I've expressed concerns before about the nature of your communications. Your official mandate has to do with planning, engineering, evaluation, project orientation. I've expressed concern before. Sometimes I wonder if your primary purpose is really just marketing. I've expressed that concern before, and I'll express it again today. This is a nifty-looking diagram. On the far right, we have a swinging bridge that's not legal, that you're not involved in, can't be involved in. We have the broadband project. You know that your role is nominal. I know that your role is nominal. I don't know how you can legitimately attach the coalition to those projects and facilitate, but your role is nominal. The reason I bring this up is I haven't studied all these other projects. I'm aware of several of them. But when you put these on here and you say, these are examples of what we're doing, $3.5 million plus spent thus far, and we're still spending, and nothing really material or tangible to show for it, as I pointed out before. When I look at these projects that you're attaching your name to that are not, that don't represent any significant accomplishment, any significant use of taxpayer funds, it draws into question, in my mind anyway, everything else on this page. So I'd encourage you to get away from the marketing and talk to us about things that the coalition has a core integral responsibility for, and stop blowing smoke, if you would.
Ask to speak to the issue of closing the meeting. As the board, I'm sure, is aware, the Open and Public Meetings Act is designed for the public bodies to discuss the public's business and deliberations openly. There's been a request today by the 7 County Coalition to close a meeting to discuss certain items. It's my understanding that the items, the exceptions that they wish to close the meeting, and I'll just read what they are under the statute, and I'll kind of discuss the options and my sort of concerns or counsel. So the two exceptions, and because the legislators intend that public bodies do their meetings in the public and their deliberations openly, there are very limited exceptions to closing a meeting. The two that have been proposed to close the meeting today by the 7 County Coalition are found in Utah Code 52-4-205. subsection 1D. And this is an exception, a strategy session to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property, including any form of water right or water shares. The public discussion of the transaction would, Roman numeral I, disclose the appraisal or estimated value of the property under consideration, or prevent the public body from completing the transaction on the best terms possible. The other exception, which was proposed, is found in the same section of the code, in subsection N. It says the purpose of considering information that is designated as trade secret as defined in section 13-24-2, if the public body's consideration of the information is necessary in order to properly conduct a procurement under Title 63D, Chapter 6 of the Utah Procurement Code. And so one of my concerns that I have in closing the meeting is the statute seems to contemplate this public body's action of those things. And here we have another public body coming in wanting to close the meeting for those exceptions. And so without having that conversation at this point, I guess you would have to take their word that these are the exceptions that would fit under OTMA if you decide to close the meeting. And the concern is, from my perspective, that I'm not sure that this is the best forum to have another public body close your meeting for exceptions that they're purporting to be under OTMA.
With that in mind, what forum would you provide? Or
so if you choose not to close your meeting to discuss these items, there are alternatives. In the Seven County Coalition meeting, they could, based on the information that they have, use the exception to close your meeting and invite the chair or the less than a quorum to attend. A letter could be sent. There's also grammar for sharing provisions that could take place, and so you know, there are other ways to get this information if you decide not to close the meeting.
So from a disclosure standpoint as well, where I sit on both boards, not the chairman, wasn't sent by the chairman, you necessarily represent the opportunity to have that go between perhaps after the close, the main difference between the information, the portion of the close session, the close sessions that Seven County has engaged in. Would that, at what point, or if it would, with, if I'm hearing you correctly, before I ask the question, in the event that another member of the board promoted by the chairman had been in our closed session, then that it would be up to the chairman whether or not to accept that motion, or to promote or provide the opportunity for a closed session in this instance. With that in mind, if it's a, from a, the steps that we could or need to go through, depending on the deliberation of this legislative body, could decide at some point, if I'm hearing you correctly, and I'm not trying to rephrase, but trying to understand, if we need to formalize something and how that gets brought to us, and in the meantime, whether or not, as a public, I don't want to make work of, in the relationship between Seven County and CIB, you're without, I'm assuming you haven't been briefed on the issues prior to this, being able to be, to support a closed session, because I'd be at this moment, if the chair were open to a motion, to make a motion to go into closed session with Seven County, with the good faith and the fact that we're not an antagonistic community between the two boards and making issues. It's not an antagonistic, we're not this way. It's still figuring out how to get the fingers put together. I would make that motion.
Sure. Maybe for we consider a motion, you can go through kind of the risks involved, the
sure.
Of the meeting and later being found to have closed it inappropriately.
Sure. And I'm just doing my job, by the way, so so a couple of things. I know generally kind of what the I've been told that that it would qualify from Seven Counties Coalition's Council. I know very general terms that, you know, it's their position that would fall kind of within this exception D of exchange of real property. Again, I don't have the detail of that, and I don't know the specifics. I was just informed briefly of that prior to this session of the meeting. And in terms of the trademark secret, you know, the exception under AHA is very specific in the sense that it would be used for procurement by this public body. So again, there's not a general trade secret exception, that it would need to be in the context of what's allowed for and under AHA for the public body's consideration of conducting a procurement under the procurement code. And in terms of options in terms of kind of risks, if for some reason you decide to vote to close the meeting and everything is done properly, down the line someone could challenge, if someone were to challenge the closed meeting, a court would look at it. If a judge were to upheld the challenge that it was an illegal meeting, in terms of illegal closing of the meeting, then the discussion and that audio recording of the closed meeting would be made public. And then second of all, there's always a risk under AHMA that under 52-4-05, any member of a public body who knowingly or intentionally violates the provisions of the closed meeting is guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. But again, that would require intent to violate AHMA.
Treasurer Gaffson will come up.
I just want to mention a couple things that I encourage the board to consider. We've had two very significant instances of legal analysis, assessment, opinion presented by Coalition's Counsel that were plainly and clearly refuted by the Attorney General's office. That calls into question the value and the competence of counsel for the coalition, number one. And it's that counsel that weighs in recommendations for closing public meetings. I've noted before that there's a closed session, at least the meeting I've looked at, virtually every single meeting of the coalition. I would encourage the coalition to read the code verbatim, as counsel did today, every time it contemplates closing its own meetings, to ensure that it's compliant with the law. And I also want to point out that we have evidence in one instance where, whether it was intentional or not, the coalition itself closed the meeting and capriciously violated the Open Public Meetings Act. So I wouldn't place great confidence in the coalition's assertion that the material that they want to bring before this board is appropriate under the Open Public Meetings Act. I think we should rely upon our counsel, and I think we should take counsel's advice in receiving or maintaining communications with the coalition in a situation where we don't place ourselves at risk. It's one thing if they'll violate the OPMA, another thing entirely if we do. Please consider that.
So I think the intent here, again, the intent of Seven County here and in the future is to try to share as much information with the board so the board feels comfortable. So what we're really talking about is what's our best avenue to get that information shared, whether it can be an open public meeting or whether there's other options on the table. Maybe Brian, because there are different provisions under grammar, correct, for material submitted that may have sensitive information, right? There may be ways to have it submitted in written format that do not make it public, but it doesn't violate Open and Public Meetings Act. So those are some options that we should probably consider as well. Commissioner Lytle.
Procedurally, we're looking for other ways to not encumber the board with Mr. Damsh's assumptions and provisions that he stated, because I don't believe those were written. I do take a little bit of offense at capriciousness as a member of that board, because they don't believe it was capricious in nature in any form. So I can only assume that that's your editorial remark. And that makes it be a little bit tight as we go there, but at the same time, our effort right now is to build the trust that needs to be done, obviously, between these two boards. And one can sense that there are issues beyond even what we're stating. That appears as or even felt so this room is providing at this board in some form. And I do look forward to looking at how what options are available to have that information. And I'm pretty certain, and I won't speak for the chair of Seven Counties, I turned my hat around and made sure I was making my declaration as a member of both, but from a collaborative standpoint in this, recognizing that it's growing pains for, I guess as a member of the board, anything that would sound anything less than being honest or upright and upfront. I agree with the comment on the bridge. There should be notes on the end of those that say what was the, or something to help illustrate what the participation was. So that us, to reduce the assumptions for the fact that someone thinks somebody's trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes. So it's a point well taken. Because I know what the intent was not, was to have anyone believe that we were doing anything less or more, other than state what position those are in. So I understand the need for the documentation or the supporting evidence or to help it be weighed in its appropriate way. My one question to the, in all of this, I'm not sure if it was noted as a request from Seven County that there would be a closed session, or that we were going to request one or not. Before I'm going to assert myself more than I would or should. But if that was known up front and there was a potential for issue and there was and there were other options to do it to facilitate the opportunity to communicate those things, recognizing our time is very valuable at many levels and more valuable as we move around. This feels like more of a waste of time going through this if there were opportunities at an earlier stage to say, you know what, we're a little uncomfortable, we're not comfortable with this. I know there's been invites, I know Chad's attended at least one meeting, I know the chief has attended meetings down in Seven Counties with opportunities to be involved in these. Maybe that, and I know that the treasurer's been at least invited, or maybe not in formal terms, but at least to know she's welcome and would be welcome to his presence. If there's some things that we can do along the line to help make it happen, let's do it as the collaborators that we are, rather than have to put what this time right now. Not to say the discussion should or couldn't or wouldn't occur, but at least if we know that it's coming up front, maybe there are ways we could avoid using this time as we are for the time.
Thank you, Commissioner Wimmerton.
I just want to make a comment. I think the treasurer's comment is that he wants answers to questions. Well, I think there's a way to get there. And if they're uncomfortable because they have non-disclosure agreements, they're going to violate their agreement if they speak about it openly. What they're asking, if you want answers to your questions, they want you to go into close so that they can be confident that they're not going to be out in the open. Otherwise, they're at risk. And so if we're not comfortable with that, then I think that we need to take them up individually, have them meet with them, ask the questions, get your answers. This is not the place to be giving answers that are sensitive. And we're not trying to violate the open meeting law at all. But as a county commissioner, we have a lot of these closed sessions because we do address a lot of sensitive issues that if we were acting against real estate and everybody else knew what we were trying to do, then the sky's the limit on the price of real estate. So you have to have those discussions, and it is not in violation. And so I think that if they have something that's kind of cutting edge and non-disclosure, it fits into that category. So as a board, we need to decide, do you want to go to the college for this, or do you want to meet with them individually and get your answers? But if you have them come back here and have the same discussion and get tired of it.
Well, let me just say the intent of the, having this as an agenda item, this is not like the main intent of having this as an agenda item. We had a discussion with Mike a couple days ago about the next portion of what we're going to discuss. And it came up, you know, that currently there's, you know, there's people on the board that feel like they don't have enough information, and this is really what we're talking about. How do we get that information? And this was brought up as a topic, and this was on Tuesday, and we were checking with the attorney on Wednesday, and we were still kind of discussing it today, you know, what options do we have on the table as far as a closed session. And so I think we explored those options. I think there are other options on the table, and however the board wants to go with this, I think I would be fine with other forms of communication, so long as people on the board are getting the information that they're seeking as part of this, the nature of our contractual relationship with Seventh County Infrastructure Coalition. I think there can be great communication. I think everybody's in favor of, you know, a smaller, you know, group session or individual meetings, whatever it takes to, you know, get that information disseminated. And I think that's not the main purpose of why we have this as an agenda item, but at the request of Mike and when we were discussing yesterday, we thought it would be good to get some updates, and if there was opportunities to get more specific information in closed session, we would explore those. I think, you know, we have, you know, it's probably a little risky. I mean, based on what the Open and Public Meetings Act means to this board, particularly because this is the nature of their business, and they have a different obligation under their own obligations than we do. So those are some things to consider. I want to just make sure that we, and again, I think everybody wants to provide the information, so let's just figure out what the best form is to do that. Yes, Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I recommend we designate to a group of board members that are non-conflicted and that in total are less than a quorum to get together with the coalition and dive into some of the detail. That would be my recommendation. I don't have any more specifics than that, but I think in principle that's the kind of thing that we need to do.
Is there any objection to that type of concept? I would be in favor of that as well. If there are a few, so we have 11 board members, so maybe up to four people that would be interested in kind of doing more of a deep dive with the coalition and understanding the nitty-gritty of these projects.
One question I have is that, okay, once that small group of people to go through that evaluation, is that information then shared with the entire board, or is it only within that small group?
I think it'd be more summary level information rather than in the weeds confidential information. I mean, if those are the concerns that exist out there, but Mr. Lyle?
So I would assume to help that go more carefully, or in all respect to the treasurer's comments or motion or suggestion or whatever form it was called in, that the council would be involved as well, so that it would relieve some of the need for redundancy, or as the question comes, is this appropriate, is it not, that we could happen. And then apparently this came up, and with this particular to the treasurer's participation on the board as a board member, I appreciate your concern and the way and the issues that you raise, and hopeful that these things come up in the that you would, in terms of how the briefings occur or don't occur, or as you're aware of the different issues, that any disclosure would occur if there's been conversation prior to these meetings on any of the issues on the agenda. Because some of these, and maybe as the agenda comes up, we have opportunity to have questions. And I'm not questioning any of them. I'm just saying maybe some might have been utilized well enough that as the agenda comes up, we see these issues and we ask questions along the way. We've got to find out better how we want to approach these in the meeting, which we should, in our diligence, to have a good meeting. So I think there's some short of a work meeting.
Right. In the interest of not dragging this discussion on forever, that people are generally supportive of having a small work group with the board getting into the issues. And I'd be happy to do that myself and get three other board members to participate with me.
I would suggest this, that if the treasurer has the time, knowing that his participation in the meeting is questions that he would be very appropriate to be on that.
Mr. Chairman, there are opportunities for one quick comment if I could. One of the things that personally I believe would be helpful, rather than just one small committee, if you choose not to do that here, my concern is if you have this as a small committee, and then the information that we provide is then a summary to the rest of the board outside of a closed session, you still may be in the same problem. And so here is a potential solution if you choose to not want to hear this today. We will keep this within those confines if you want to hear this. But we are learning. And if considerable expense to travel around the entire state and to meet commissioner by commissioner or council person, but if there was an opportunity maybe in three different groups where we could come around and do this in three. That way, everybody will hear the information, ask any questions you have, and we will be able to do that, and maybe comply. We're all trying to get to the same place. And I wanted to just say one other thing, too, and I appreciated the meeting we had this afternoon on Tuesday. Thank you, John, for keeping, and also from your office, Treasurer Benson. We appreciated that meeting. I think it was a very productive meeting. But I would say with that, I felt it was kind of a joint feeling that there would be value of having the closed session and trying to be able to get this information. Because as we talked about, as I understood, so this is the kind of information that the board's been looking for. And so we would like to be able to help in any way we can do that. We certainly, as we mentioned earlier, the open portion of this, there are many millions of dollars at stake here, depending on how we do things. Tremendous amount of money, even to the revenues of the CIB board, and we would think it's valuable to have that discussion and how we do this and what's the best way to try to work through this.
So let me get by a show of hands who on the board wants to get into the weeds and the meat on this issue, and we can help facilitate these types of meetings. Don't all volunteer at once.
Well, I certainly would, but I guess what's your criteria?
Well, you're on both boards, so you're already in the weeds on both those issues. So I won't be so concerned about that. But, for those who are not or who have not attended the meetings in the past and would like, as board members here, to get into the weeds of how the money is being spent and what specific projects are really attached at the core of what you're doing, not the periphery, but really those core elements that you're working on that you are worried about, your NDAs and other things that you want to talk about in the sensitive nature as sensitive information. Those are the we'd be happy if you get a note who all raised their hand, Candace. Okay. We'll help facilitate that, those types of meetings, so that we make sure everybody's getting information on this. So without further, yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Was that motion by Mr. Benson to say that we'll have the select session recordings obtained with the group? If that's a motion, we need to make that motion a second and make it official.
I don't know that it needs to be a motion. We can just set up these meetings, so no motion necessary. Good suggestion. And we'd be happy to help facilitate this. So the other thing I wanted to talk about is our contract. Some of you may know that there was an initial inquiry made by the state auditor's office to our office on kind of the application and contracting process with Seven County Infrastructure Coalition. That was an initial inquiry. We provided information. We haven't heard much else besides that.
But we did take the opportunity to send down our internal team, our internal auditing team, to go take a look at our contract, our reimbursements, to make sure, you know, if the state auditor went down right behind us, that we'd know what they were going to find. There's one real ambiguous issue that I want to take care of, and I think then a point of clarification so that we're all on the same page moving forward. We did identify that, again, this is a look at, you know, you send an auditor in, they look at the documentation that's there, and whatever doesn't line up comes into question of whether there's an issue, whether it's a solvable issue, whether you need more documentation. We are in that process with them. We have met with Sherman County Infrastructure Coalition. We feel like a lot of the issues that were identified are just we need more documentation, and we think we can obtain a lot of that documentation and resolve those concerns. There is one outstanding issue that I think this board needs to address. One of the issues that was identified is that there was two or three large, I won't say super large, reimbursements that were made for costs incurred before this board awarded a contract to Seven County Infrastructure Coalition. And I think it's fair to say, from the Infrastructure Coalition's perspective, this organization didn't exist, and this board was interested in getting the organization up and running at the time. And there seems to be some thought process out there that those costs were going to be covered as part of the grant. It was never technically a part of an application, a contract, or a discussion that we can find in the open public meetings that this board have ever had. But I think it's important that this board recognizes they do have the ability to recognize that if they want to honor those costs. If they don't, those would be ineligible costs because they'd be incurred. They don't meet the documentation standard with their contract. So I think, you know, for those who, I wasn't around when this whole discussion was going, so I'm going to have to defer to a lot of people who were on the board when this was going on. I talked to Keith briefly. He believes that, you know, that was the discussion with the board, whether it was made in public or not, that getting that organization set up, those set up costs were going to be contemplated as a covered cost. But I want to leave that, we really need the board to make an affirmative decision on this so that we can either, we can resolve this particular issue one way or the other. I've got our auditors down here with us, Doug Lee, and he'd be happy to answer any specific questions of anything that was as a result of that review. But I think this is one specific item that we want to resolve today. And then I think we want to talk about, you know, how do we feel about the contract moving forward, make sure we're all moving forward on the same page. And I'll get to that discussion point here in a minute, but I want to address this first issue. So maybe some of those board members who were maybe here during the time of that discussion, probably less than half of us now. So I'm kind of what the intent, whether we want to cover those pre-award costs or the covered costs under the contract.
Can you remind us how much the amount we're talking about?
This is less than, this is probably $30,000 or less, or higher.
What were they for?
$36,000. This is legal setup costs. Obviously, to set up an interlocal, you need certain documentation in line. You have to file with the Lieutenant Governor's office. I think there were some pre-engineering work done on it. The crux of the original contract was around the rail line and other infrastructure things that were being considered at the time. So those things were all occurring as part of that discussion. Those. So I'm told $36,000 by Doug. Is that right? It's about $36,000. Yes, Commissioner Winterton.
I came on the board in January 2015. I believe the coalition was organized somewhere late fall of 2014. From my recollection, it was always the intent to go back and recover those costs and pay for them, because it did take organization to draw up the maps and designate where the coalition boundary was going to be. So I don't think that there was old CEO, director, that some of those, the staff was holding on to those saying they weren't qualifying. I thought we had amended it to make sure that they understood that those were covered costs. So I think that we did cover the bases.
Mr. Chairman?
Hold on, I'll go to Commissioner. Let me get the head shaking Commissioner Adams here. Maybe you can comment, and then we'll go to Mr. Giannotti.
Well, as I remember, there was no question that the funds that we were providing from CIB were gonna be to help set the organization up to make sure that what we were doing, the interlocals and all of that information was legal and by the book, and so from what I remember, it was all part of the cost to be covered.
Mr. Slade?
Shouldn't we rely on the minutes of the meetings for the past month from the time that it discusses if there's any misconception or misunderstanding? I wasn't those meetings. I don't remember specifically addressing that this cost of certain elements is going to be covered or not covered, but I'm sure there's inherent in the part that if they're going to be doing certain studies, certain engineering part, or the certain recommendation, I'm pretty sure the cost should have been. But shouldn't we rely on the minutes of the opinion of the time to see the discussion we can have?
Yeah, I don't, we cannot find it as discussed in the meeting. I think we understand that everybody was conceptually on board with that, but I don't think it was ever, when the application was considered and funding was authorized, this was never technically addressed. So it's kind of a, you know, when you send in an auditor to go look at it, those are the things they don't find that raise the question of whether this is a covered cost or not. So what we need to decide as a board is if this is a covered cost or not. If we do, then we can get that covered and resolve that concern. But that is something that we want to be sure of. Mr. Galecki, you're looking
for. Well, actually, I was right with Mr. Sinai. He's wondering, you know, what the men said. But you're saying that they worked that it wasn't discussed in the minutes.
I don't remember hearing discussion per se specifically for what we're going to do.
I can't recall. I mean, I was on the board. I don't recall the intent, you know.
Well, I mean, so.
But right now, it's really, you go back to summary, it's just if you feel good about it.
Well, so the nature of the application and what was being, the work that was being performed is not necessarily outside of the scope of work of what was contemplated. It's just there's no specific mention of pre-award costs. So typically, you know, when any other applicant comes in, you're looking to make an award and they would incur costs after the award was made. So we had really never specifically addressed it from a technical perspective, and in order to, you know, pass clean audits, you need to have that type of definitive documentation on it. Do you have a comment, Candace?
Well, I just, general comment. We always, when we do our tutorials, we tell the applicant that any costs incurred after the board authorization are eligible for reimbursement. Anything prior to board authorization is not, but it is a board decision.
Well, at this stage, it's kind of nobody remembers anything, nobody knows anything. I would suggest take it from my annual raise. Don't give it to me. Thanksgiving time.
If you have a comment, Mike. Mike was on board at the time, but maybe that kind of brings some perspective as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know what I said may seem to be self-serving to the coalition, so I was great to have a friend, but if I can, just the perspective as to how this happens. We were at a retreat, a CIB retreat, when this actually happened. And Chairman Walker was, you know, was being put together and being organized and put together. Some of you may remember this, maybe not. But in any case, in setting up the organization, the bylaws, the boundaries, all of that had to be done. And the discussion Gordon had with Eric Johnson at the time was on that very issue, and then to be able to have that reimbursed. Whether the board feels good about that or not, and that is a decision to work with that if it happens.
Mr. Mr. Chairman, as a clarification, the money, $36,000, is going to pay the money that they have already in the existing account?
We have paid and reimbursed it. So what we have done is reviewed all of our reimbursements to see if it lines up documentation-wise. Right now, there's a question because of that amount, because we don't have this documentation that addresses pre-award costs. The board can address that. We can resolve this issue one way or the other. The board either says, yes, we're going to honor pre-award costs, and it would eliminate that questionable amount, or the board could say, you know, we are not covering pre-award costs, and then that's a burden upon Seven County to pay it back or have it withheld from future reimbursements. Those are really the two options on the table. It's just kind of a cut and dry issue. We've just got to decide whether those pre-award costs that were contemplated at the time, whether that's something that we want to honor and cover.
I make a motion to approve it.
Second. So there's a motion from Mr. Zanotti to approve pre-award costs, and a second from Commissioner Winterton.
Discussion.
And the discussion on the table, Mr. Danchin.
Mr. Danchin. I wasn't here at the time, under normal circumstances, I just want to talk about my thought process. If I have an employee who is diligent and organized and always does the right thing, and they occasionally need accommodation, of course, I'll always provide it. That's the thought process that comes to my mind. I'm not sure why, but I see this is very similar. CID has well-established disciplines and processes. Staff dots the I's and cross the T's and documents things to make sure we're in compliance with the law, to make sure that we're very solid stewards of taxpayers' money. And this particular amount that we're talking about is not the only transaction related to the coalition that has drawn CID and its staff well away from established processes. We had attorney-client privilege claim that was made, that information withheld by the coalition, I think repeatedly. So to the extent that we're talking about a tip of the iceberg transaction that is indicative of kind of a pattern of CID and its staff being drawn away from well-established disciplines, documentation, and compliance, that weighs on me. I just wanted to make that comment before you vote.
I just would like to mention also that whatever's happened in the past, we missed it, staff missed it, or all of us were asleep at the meeting. Going forward, we need to be more disciplined from your part and from our part, and the staff, that we should be more diligent. If we bring my attention now, we highlight all the what we need to do. So please, go forward. Give us some opportunities in advance of what you're trying to do, what kind of budget you have, or what you're going to be deducting as expense, so we will be around for the same year later. But for today, my motion is basically just come behind us and go forward.
Yeah, that's discussion number two that's coming up here.
Oh,
yes.
Comment here. We asked them if they could cover this $36,000. I mean, that would keep us in compliance, correct? If we, the pre money is pre-approved.
That would be called protocol.
So we're not bending these rules. So, I mean, I'm just asking.
Can I go ahead and state that? Technically, we can, Peter, but let me mention some of the challenges we've had. As they talk about the audit, probably the biggest item we had was this, the setup process. But we had several other items that cost the coalition a little bit of money. I think it was about $8,000 to $10,000 that we didn't dispute on the cost of. And we'll be very excited about this. It was one of us had to do with some reimbursement to the former executive, not reimbursement, but what was happening. Some of the board might remember the executive director was not getting paid time, and it's been out for a long time. And so what happened is that URS, they demand their money up front and on time. But the reimbursements wasn't coming back to CID. That's not a criticism of CID. We're a new organization. Things were getting set up. It took time. So there was several thousand, $25,000 in penalties. CID, and we're not just kidding, I said, we're not going to take collectives. The problem is, so here's the issue. And we set up the organization, it's not like we have a bank account with a bunch of money into it. We do have a little bit that we can work with. If this board says we're not going to do it, can we survive? We can. It's an extremely tight organization. We're working over trying to do the very best we can. If the board should vote for the motion, obviously we'd appreciate it. If the board feels different, we will survive.
Okay, motion on the table is to authorize career award costs. That's from the supermind, seconded by Commissioner Winterton. There's no further discussion of that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Raise your hand, please. So Commissioner Mattson, Mayor Norton, Susanati, Commissioner Adams, Mr. Lytle, and Commissioner Winterton. Those opposed? Mr. Austin, Treasurer Damson, Councilman Barrel, Mr. Galecki, that motion carries. So we will honor the free award cost. We will probably look to make an amendment to the contract to reflect that so there's no ambiguity on that moving forward. The second item for discussion, which I'm glad Mr. Zanotti brought this up, is really, you know, how do we move forward? We have to be to a level of comfortability on both sides. We have a large contract. As the treasurer mentioned, there's been $3.5 million spent. There's clearly some angst, at least among some folks, that we're spending a lot of money. We don't feel like we're attached to it as much as we want. I think I'd like to characterize it a little bit as, you know, there's probably one school of argument that we set up this organization with $5 million and we were trusting you to make the decisions within this, you know, pretty, I know it's a runoff sentence, but it's a pretty small and general scope of work. It's not very specific. And whether the board's comfortable with that or whether they want a little more structured and directive scope of work to make sure that they're comfortable moving forward. I think those are some questions that have been popping up for a while now, and I think it'll be good to get on the same page moving forward so that everybody knows what the rules of engagement are here. You know, specifically, I know there have been some issues pop up here recently where, you know, and I wanted to be clear very upfront that, you know, there was some proposed legislation that was being drafted. It certainly wasn't within the scope of contract or what CIV would fund, and I wanted to be clear that those costs were not going to be covered. But we do want to make sure, you know, our large grant, which is funding almost everything in your organization, is everybody's on the same page moving forward, what that should and should not be used for. And so I want to have a little bit of discussion, make sure everybody gets their issues out on the table, and we actually get to a point where we're comfortable with this contract, whether it needs to be fully amended or whether, you know, people want it to exist as is. But, you know, I'm a little tired of going through the ambiguity on every contract review. I mean, our staff did a great job, and they're reviewing it to the scope and nature of the contract and application, and that isn't always what we see, and that may be the board's intent, but we don't have enough to really delineate that very easily. So it's important for us to get some clarity from all sides of the table on what the nature of this relationship needs to be moving forward. So. If you have issues or want more clarity or want to bring those things up, now is the time to have that discussion so that we can do a proper amendment if necessary, or we can, you know, really define this moving forward.
So, John, do you have a starting place for this? I mean, obviously you want to amend the contract so it's clear what we're doing moving forward. Do you have specific things, or at this point are you just looking for the board to chime in on anything they'd like to see more specified?
Well, I'd love everybody's individual perspectives on this and have a discussion about it. I think that's probably the first and foremost. I mean, they've been back here many times. If we don't feel like it's meeting our expectations, we probably need to tell them how it's not meeting and what we expect differently and whether we want to amend our contract to reflect that. I think that's something that should be a fair discussion. So, Commissioner Winterton.
Okay. first of all, I think that it's have to commend those that have the vision to set the PID board up many years ago to help rural Utah. I have to also commend the former chairman, Walker, his vision to set up the planning group. Some would say that maybe that doesn't fall within the realm of what CID does. Yes, it does. It has value there. But the same things that are being argued against the coalition, we argue against the planning group. The coalition had a vision to centralize all the requests so that the rural counties were not all competing for the same dollars. That they have a priority list, there'd be one voice coming forward. So I have to commend him for this vision to see that this would be a voice to be reckoned with in the future. Not only the goal of the coalition to help this board with their bringing increasing mineral lease, but to be able to be one voice. I have to commend them. I mean, it's been an uphill battle. I was one of the skeptics at first because Chairman Walker said we can do this. I think he was under a timeline he wanted to get it done before he left. I didn't think they could get it done, but they did. I'm supporting the coalition because I think the value there. And Treasurer Daniel doesn't because he hasn't been there to see some of the uphill battles that we have to face out in the basin because of just jurisdiction and land use. This power line wouldn't have happened if we hadn't been involved. There's a bigger issue out there that was not discussed, and I'm glad that we were able to facilitate that power line. Yes, we didn't have, they were able to do it by themselves after we got involved. But to the point that they brought me in, it wasn't going nowhere. It was a dead end wall. And so there are projects on here that they're taking credit for because they started the conversation. Somebody has to. As commissioners, we don't decide winners or losers. We're to help all of them. And if the private sector can do it, okay, let them do it. Sometimes they just don't know where to go, and we facilitate that. So I, for one, want to continue to push the coalition because someday they're not going to be coming back to this board asking you for money. These projects that they have on the boards will be generating money that they're not going to ask for. But until that day comes, I think we need to support you with the original $5 million and help them achieve their goal. And once that happens, I don't believe they're going to have to come here. So, I would just invite all of you to see what they actually do and give them the credit that they have. I mean, we have to look outside of the box. I'm another proponent for P3 public-private partnerships. It's a concept that Utah doesn't want to grasp, and now they are. But it's been done for 30 years all over the United States. And that's how people that don't have mineral lease have been able to make this happen. Yes, it's a concept that we're not warm and fuzzy about, but it is an option. I mean, we're trying to figure out, do we give them grant money or do we give them loan money? If we have a private partner come in, aren't they providing that grant money and we can match it with a loan? So, again, we need to look outside of the box. How do we accomplish the goal? And we don't necessarily have to have our name on the project. Because as a commissioner, I want economic development in my community because I'm looking at the tax base that it's going to promote. So however that happens, I want to be supportive of that. I don't have to have my name on anything, and I don't have to say that we gave them the grant. I got the partners together, and they figured it out. And in our community, that's how we've done it. We have cooperatives, our phone company, our hospital, our electric company. We figured it out. We did it on our own. And I'm proud of that. And I think this board needs to be accommodating to help these rural counties, cities, coalitions, because they do have a vision. I mean, people see the value of that, and they're coming to us. But because it's unusual to us, we're saying, wait a minute, I'm uncomfortable with it. If you go back and look at the Eastern United States, if you look at Europe, those things already have existed for years. And because we are not comfortable with it, does not make it wrong. It's that, let's see. Maybe we have to give it a try. Will we do it right the first time? Hopefully we don't make many mistakes, but we can correct those as we go along. The Coalition, they're a young organization. I give them credit that they're still pushing along, because if I were in that seat, I probably would have threw my hands up because there's been a lot of opposition. And yet, if you look at the project and the value that's here from the stage being built, my hats are off to them.
Well, sure, there's a lot to say here. I really appreciate that, Commissioner Winters. And I think it's important to note, like, in the